Transportation Committee, and good morning to everybody. And I will go ahead and let Senator Starr go ahead and...
And I will gavel in the Senate Committee.
Thanks for everyone coming today. We're going to start with some easy issues first, and we'll move through those very quick and before we head into the more difficult issues. So I have my first panel up here, and we're doing a public hearing and work session on the legislative concept 64. And I'll then let Patrick let everybody know.
Thank you, Madam Chair. LC 64 modifies penalties for operating in violation of variance permits, specifically for failure to have required number of pilot vehicles. It modifies terms of offense for failure to remove motor vehicles from a roadway, and this measure has an emergency clause and will be effective upon passage in the February session.
Thank you. Committee, remember this was a cleanup of a bill that we did last session. And I can go ahead and ask them to speak, but I don't know if you need it, so maybe if you have any questions of our panel.
If I may, Madam Chair. So, to whomever, what if we don't pass this, then what are the consequences?
Madam Chair, Representative Tomei, there's two parts to this. The first part changes the penalty structure for violations of size and weight permits.
Remember to introduce yourself for the record.
Excuse me. Bob Russell with the Oregon Trucking Associations. You may recall Senate Bill House Bill 2936 from last session, which was our buddy bill. We had the Volkswagen buses. We had the permits. What we were trying to do is increase the fines for failure to hire pilot cars when they were required under the permit. And the third piece was what we called the Move It legislation, which required drivers involved in fender benders on state highways to move to the side of the road. What we found is that we did a perfect job on the Volkswagen buses, but we didn't do a perfect job on the other two pieces. After session, we realized that on the permit violations, it was much broader than we anticipated. Matter of fact, it covered everything that could possibly be a violation when a truck was operating under a permit. Under the Move It legislation, it was actually more of a problem because the way it was worded, and we copied it from South Carolina's law, the way it was worded is if the driver was not injured, then you moved the vehicles over to the side of the road. In fact, the law enforcement pointed out to us that should not be our only concern. It should be the driver, the passenger, a pedestrian, a bicyclist, anybody is injured, then the vehicle should not move. So that's what this does, is make it clear that if there's any injuries, then the vehicle stay in place, which is, quite frankly, the more problematic piece of this. And with the emergency clause, it will take care of both of them, and the incorrect statutes will only have been in place for a very, very short period of time.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay. On this side, I can take a motion.
Madam Chair.
I'm going to open a work session on LC 64.
Madam Chair, I move that LC 64 be recommended for introduction at the February 2008 special session.
Representative Tomei moves LC 64 be recommended for introduction in the February 2008 special session. Any discussion? Seeing none, all of those the opinion that LC 64 be introduced. Do we need to do a voice?
You can do it by no objection.
Any objections? Seeing none, LC 64 is introduced. Thank you. Okay, and the next, I'm closing the work session on LC 64. I'm going to open a work session on Legislative Concept 81. And Patrick,
Madam Chair, LC 81 is essentially a redraft of a bill that was considered during session. That bill was House Bill 3020. The measure directs the Department of Transportation to erect and maintain roadside memorial signs for pedestrians or bicyclists who are killed in a motor vehicle accident under certain circumstances, specifically a circumstance where the person died as a result of an accident involving a motor vehicle where the person is convicted of an offense and in which the immediate family member submits an application. This measure died in the Ways and Means Committee during session, but is being reintroduced at this time, and I believe we have somebody here to speak to it.
Well, good afternoon, members of the committee. I'm Don Phillips, Chief of Staff for State Representative Jerry Krummel, who should be here any minute. And if he is, I'll jump up and let him jump in. But he wanted us to just kind of bring you up to speed on this bill and try to get your support for it. Many of you were on the House Transportation Committee during session and voted unanimously in support of this bill before it went down to Ways and Means. And please keep in mind, it has no fiscal impact. We've done gobs of research on this bill. We've looked at the numbers. These fines are totally paid for by the families. So there's no impact that we can see to ODOT on this. It did have broad bipartisan support, and we tried to bring it to the floor in the very last days of the session, and were not successful in getting a floor debate or a vote. But since then, we've seen an even bigger groundswell of support out in the community. I'm sure you've read the headlines, seen the TV news reports about some of the various bike tragedies, especially in the Portland area. And we've also had a string of new laws take effect to help improve bike safety in Oregon, including a new Share the Road license plate. Maybe you've heard about that. We'd like to take that message and put it on memorial signs so that we can remind motorists and cyclists that we all need to be aware of our safety on the roadways. This is a very simple bill. It costs nothing to the state, but the value in terms of public awareness for safety and for a way for us to remember victims is priceless. With me today is Lorna Kautsky. Her husband, Eric, died almost 3 years ago, and that's when we started working on this bill. And, in fact, we call it Eric's Law. And I'd like Lorna to say a few words, if that'd be all right with you.
Good afternoon. I think I recognize some of you from the past meeting. My name is Lorna Kautsky, and I am here in support of Concept 81, and also priorly known as House Bill 3020. And as Don has said, it provides guidelines for the State Transportation Committee to erect memorial roadside signs for cyclists and pedestrians who were killed in a motor vehicle crash upon the request of the immediate family. The bill or the concept that is developed, it came from a very personal experience in my own life and my family's life. And I, like I said before, I did not come bearing facts and statistics. I come with a heart that's heavy and hope that I can help other families get through this trauma in their life as well. I did contact Representative Krummel and Don in regards to how I could bring awareness to cycling safety, how I could help other families in a time of tragedy, and how a cyclist's death or a pedestrian's death is just as important as anyone else's death on our public highways. A simple memorial roadside sign to honor those that lost their lives and to bring an awareness to public safety of sharing the roads. Eric, my husband, was a lifelong cyclist, an advocate for cycling safety, taught cycling safety, and was very, very adamant about sharing the roads with motorists. He had just begun his retirement from public education after 28 years. And was able to go and ride as often as he wanted to, usually in the morning to avoid the traffic. So he had so much to look forward to. So my shock and surprise was without words when on that Saturday morning in June at 8 o'clock, the chaplain from the state police arrived at my door to tell me that Eric had been killed while cycling in the cycling lane 2 miles from our home. After the shock and the reality of it all set in, I knew I had to become proactive in some way to honor him and to help others that may be in the same situation. So I contacted Representative Carmel, my representative, and Don Phillips with the idea of a memorial roadside sign similar to the ones that you see on the roads for drunk drivers. And then, so after much work and my retelling the story over and over again, we were able to get it into House Bill 3020, last legislative session. I learned a lot during that process. It gave me an opportunity to grieve and to bring an awareness. I have since understood some things that I didn't understand before. As an elementary teacher teaching about our state government, I've learned a lot about that. I'm retired, though. So had I taken my field trips down to the state capitol now, it would have been a little bit different perspective, I think. I would have known a little bit more. So after much work and a lot of dedication, a bill finally came through last year to bring an awareness to the public of sharing the road with cyclists, and also an opportunity, which to me is even more important, is for families to be able to take this tragedy and have some way to remember that loved one or some way to honor that person. And in the same vein, still make it a public awareness that there are cyclists and pedestrians both that we need to be aware of. It's particularly been poignant this year with all the cycling deaths and the carelessness that some drivers use in dealing with cyclists. The cost of the sign, the family would incur the cost of the sign. It would cost the state nothing to erect the sign. Fortunately, I was able to pay for that sign, and there is a sign for my husband, which I hope reminds everybody each time as they drive by, because it has his name, it has a cyclist, and it has share the road with cyclists. So to me, that's very, very valuable, not just for my heart, but for other people as well. It's kind of a dignified way to honor someone that lost their life in a crash, not in an accident, rather than having a wooden cross or artificial flowers or whatever, which I understand people need to do in their grieving. This provides a more dignified way of remembering that loved one. The bill was presented last legislative session, and I think my car could drive down to the state capitol without my guidance at all, because I made many trips down here, met some really wonderful people, and was very excited when this came about, the opportunity to possibly pass this bill. And needless to say, when it did not pass, after I had heard so much tremendous support from so many people, I was a little bit shocked, pretty sad, and a little confused as to why exactly this bill did not pass. So I'm still in the process, still driving to Salem, still trying to figure out what I can do to make this more clear to me and to others. It's been 2.5 years now, and I'm still sharing my story, my husband's story, in hopes that some people will realize how important a loved one's life is and how you can take something so horrific and such a terrible loss and turn it into something hopefully positive to help others and to help our community and to help our state. I have been contacted by several cycling organizations regarding the sign. They're very, very positive about that and very appreciative that we are actually looking at that as something that we can do to honor cyclists. My loss and our family's loss is forever on this earth, but a person's memory can live on through what we used to call House Bill 31, but which is now Concept 81. I do appreciate this opportunity to speak to you in person, to give a face to what's going on, and again, for me to learn more about what I can do. I hope that by putting my face to this and my name to this, there will be a realization that this is not just a legislative process. This is not just a legislative concept. It's about a caring state and a caring community. Thank you.
Do you have anything to add?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I could pull the... do you want to speak or do you want the bill to... No.
Well, in that case...
I'm kidding. Thank you.
Madam Speaker, for the... excuse me, Madam Chair. For the record, State Representative Jerry Kremel, House District 26, Westland, Wilson... Excuse me, Wilsonville, Sherwood, and over to Gaston. I don't have Westland anymore. I don't know where my head's at today. I would just like
to point out a couple of things. I know that there were some other comments made on my behalf by my staff, and I have approved those comments. So thank you very much for letting that go in my absence. But one thing that I would just like to point out is that Washington County did do a model ordinance, and it was based on work that we started with working with Mrs. Kowski on, and then we worked with the Department of Transportation for Washington County to develop the rules, to develop the model ordinance. They were able to then pass it and institute it and get it started. They were a little bit hesitant and a little uncomfortable because there was not statutory language that basically allowed them to do it. And we said, well, you know what, there's also not statutory language that prohibits you from doing it, so let's just go ahead and do it. What we tried to do with the original bill in 07 and what you've done with the concept now is take basically the Washington County model ordinance and moved it into statutory language. And by doing that, it's not directive, but it is permissive. And I think that's the thing that's extremely important here. It's directive from the standpoint that ODOT would be working with the counties if ODOT themselves were approached by somebody that wanted to do this type of assignment. But again, as Lorna pointed out, there's no cost to the state. There's no fiscal on this. And it's one of those things, the way that we can help families. And I think, you know, one of the things that I would point out, Eric was an educator. He was an educator as an athletic trainer. He was an educator in science. And now, what's really interesting is that now, even in death, he's still being an educator because his name is up there, and it says, share the road. And it reminds people that we have other users of our roads besides automobiles. And we have to understand that we have to share the road, and let's respect that and remember, you know, a 180-pound man on a 56-pound bike, actually they're probably about a 26-pound bicycle now, is no match for a 4,000-pound car. And we need to understand that there is a sharing. This is a good reminder for that, and so I would urge the two committees to pass the bill on. Let's pass it during the February session, and this be a program that we can all kind of walk away from and say, you know, this is something that we did in a very bipartisan way, and we're happy that we were able to do it, and it helps families. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Are we in work session?
Not yet.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'm going to close the public hearing on LC 81 and open a work session on LC 81. Representative Reed.
Madam Chair, I move that LC 81 be recommended for introduction at the February 2008 special session.
Thank you. Representative Reed moves LC 81 be recommended for introduction in the February 08 special session. Any discussion?
Madam Chair, I just wondered, I would have asked a question, but so the sign that ODOT will design will be something similar to this? Do we know what the sign will look like?
Would you like me to answer that?
Yes,
Madam Chair?
Why don't you go ahead?
Okay.
You have the answer.
State Representative Jerry Krummel again. That is a model of the sign that we would ask ODOT to develop. I think the key here is that it's a very simple sort of thing. It's not meant to be distracting, but that is a good example of what we would ask ODOT to put in place.
Perfect. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other discussion?
Madam Chair.
Seeing none? Oh, yes. Sorry.
Thank you. At this point, Representative Krummel, does the agency have a position on the bill?
Madam Chair and Senator Johnson, I don't know that they do. During the regular session in 07, they had taken a neutral approach to the bill. They weren't concerned about it. They weren't concerned about it from a standpoint of cost. I don't believe that position has changed, and I don't have any information that says that their position has changed from a standpoint of being against it yes, they're real gung-ho on it. I think they're neutral on it.
And follow-up, Madam Chair.
I was going to say, they are here if you want to ask them in person. Or
I would appreciate that because I have one more follow-up question that I don't want to put Representative Krummel in the position of speaking for the agency if the agency is in the room.
That'd be great.
Thank you.
You want me to stay here, Madam Chair?
You can stay there if you want.
I'll be glad.
Just in case.
Okay.
Amy Joyce, Oregon Department of Transportation.
Thanks for coming.
The department is neutral on the LC.
Follow-up, Madam Chair?
Yes, follow-up.
With respect to some of the organic memorials that have grown up, and they are crosses, flowers, things like that, if this bill passes, what action or activities will ODOT take with respect to the what now may be described perhaps loosely as the non-approved memorials? And the reason that I ask is that in some of the ODOT maintenance regions, crews have been pretty aggressive about tearing those memorials down. And I'm just trying to, if they appear to be in the right-of-way, and I'm just trying to ascertain those memorials are no less heartfelt than the testimony that we just heard. And what I'm trying to anticipate is what, once there's a standardized memorial, what will ODOT do about the organic memorials?
Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, the current practice of the maintenance districts for those organic memorials, as you described them, cropping up on right-of-way is typically they're left for a brief amount of time and then moved and removed and taken to a maintenance yard for safety concerns. My expectation is that that would continue to be the policy and practice of the department to leave them for perhaps brief amounts of time and then remove them, which is current practice.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any other? Seeing no other discussion, is there any objection? Seeing none, LC 81 has been recommended for introduction in this 2008 special session, and the motion carries.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Before you move on to the next item, I apologize for being late. I would appreciate the courtesy of being able to record a vote on the introduction. Sorry. Sorry.
We didn't get
always welcome.
You get your turn next.
Sorry.
Okay. Are you finished with your work for the moment?
I'm finished with mine for the moment.
Okay. Colleagues, we have two legislative concepts for introduction in the Senate today, and I think the first thing, because we have a lot of folks here today, I think it would be good to kind of set the stage of what we're doing. As you know, we're preparing for the February session, and we will be introducing two concepts today that we will spend the time primarily two committees getting to understand the elements, particularly of LC 32, and then the House version of which is identical legislative concept 82. We will be going. Our hearing today goes till 4 o'clock. So after we've had a chance to hear all the elements of the bill, because I know most of you don't know what's actually in the bills. We'll have whatever times to take some testimony on at this point. And then we will be meeting again on the 22nd to take more extensive testimony. People have had time to look at the LC and make comments about different portions. And then, of course, as we move into session, we'll have numerous hearings on this. So this will be the very first of many hearings on this bill as we move this thing through. And hopefully by the time we go through this process, everyone who wants to have a say in that will do so. If you have signed up to testify and you're not one of the few that will make it in before 4 o'clock, we, of course, will retain your sign-up lists for the next hearing on the legislation. We also encourage you to submit any written testimony to the committee administrator for our packet, especially when we really start getting into the details, as we will after today's introductory session. So just want to do that and get us on track. So I think what I'll do right now, I'm going to open up a public hearing on legislative concept 31. And, Patrick, you want to just give us the overview of what 31 is?
Yes, well, Mr. Chair, legislative concept 31 requires that cardlock card issuers provide the Department of Transportation with fuel tax information. It requires the card issuer to collect and remit fuel taxes when cardlock cardholder purchases fuel at a retail facility that has attended portion equipped with a cardlock reader.
Okay. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to close public hearing and open a work session on legislative concept 31 so we could introduce that for the session, and then we'll return to the public hearing portion.
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr. I move adoption or approval for the introduction of LC 31 for the February special session.
Thank you. Senator Starr has moved introduction of legislative concept 31 to be considered by the February 2008 legislative session. And a reminder, colleagues, that introduction of the measure does not indicate either support or opposition to the measure to be considered. Yes, Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chair, I just want to raise this at this moment because we have gotten ourselves into difficulty with a bill that was introduced last session with regard to adding ethanol to fuel, with the unintended consequence of not paying attention to the impact on aviation. And I know that there are cardlock aviation facilities, and I don't want that element of this bill to get lost again, and we have unintended consequences for other classes of users other than automotive.
Very good point. Thank you. Senator Starr has moved introduction of legislative concept 31. Is there any objection to the introduction of the measure for this session? Hearing none, shall be introduced. Now we'll close work session, reopen the public hearing on legislative concept 31, and I'll begin with Lorna Youngs explain your position on this, and then Mr. Romaine will go to Mr. Romaine to give some of the details, or would you prefer to do it the other way around? Okay, we'll start with you.
I'm Lorna Youngs, Deputy Director of Central Services with the Department of Transportation. And what this bill does is it expands the definition of cardlock. And essentially the problem that we have is that diesel fuel is taxed at the point in which it's sold. And if you are exempt from taxation you provide that documentation that you're exempt from taxation. In a cardlock facility now under statute is defined as a facility that has both gasoline and diesel fuel sales. There are a growing number of diesel-only cardlock facilities, but the statute does not allow for the cardlock mechanism to work in terms of tax collection at those facilities. And so essentially under our statute, we are left with no other choice but to treat those as retail establishments. In other words, the person who owns that facility has to determine whether or not the person owes tax or is tax exempt. And if they are unattended, that's a difficult proposition. So the net result of that is that they end up having to collect tax when it may not be appropriate to collect tax. So that's what we want to rectify, is both unattended card lock facilities that are diesel only, and also now there is a growing trend to put diesel card lock facilities into retail gasoline establishments, and they too are not, they don't fall under the definition of a card lock facility, so we want to expand it so that in both of those situations, the card itself determines, the card that you're issued determines whether or not you are exempt from taxation, and then we can use that information from the card supplier to determine how to collect the tax, and we'll have a much more equitable and accurate tax collection system.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Jones. Mr. Romaine, welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Paul Romaine. I'm representing the Oregon Petroleum Association. The department has been wonderful to work with on this. The problem was that you didn't know who was responsible for payment of the tax, and it was done in different ways. There is absolutely no way to check at an unattended facility whether or not the person filling up is filling up correctly or not, whether you're supposed to collect the tax or not. This puts the, and there was a question of who really had the responsibility. In fact, I have another. Actually, attached to this is another little case that I have to work on where the person just received a $96,000 tax bill from the state, and they're going, do I just turn over the keys now, or what do? We need to just decide who's responsible. We said to the state, just tell us how you'd like to do this. They drafted this. We said we would introduce it for them, and we're working with them on it. They've been wonderful to work with, and we commend it to you, please.
Questions from anyone on the committee? Yes, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm totally ignorant about this issue, and I apologize for that. Why is anybody exempt from paying taxes on fuel?
If you have a Mr. Chair and Chair and Representative Tomei. Did I go through the correct order? I don't know. If you have a PUC permit, you may be taking without paying. You're paying through weight mile. You're doing whatever. But so it's with diesel. We're not talking gas. It's diesel. And we're not talking self-service, please. We're not talking self-service. That would get me on the road to a divorce. So we really don't want to go that route. And, again, the situation that Senator Johnson brought up deals with aviation and access to aviation fuel. Ethanol, unfortunately, makes planes fall from the sky, and we really don't want that happening. That's a separate problem from this. This is simply just the tax issue. But you do need to address that other one.
Follow up?
Thank you.
Yeah. Just very briefly, I want to make sure that I understand, Paul. So the people who are paying weight mile tax are exempt from paying the gas tax or diesel tax, right?
Well, yes, those people. But somebody will issue a card, and it's through a system, whatever. It might be issued in Scappoose. It might be issued in Utah. And what happens is that card will determine your status, basically, for tax purposes. So you'll get a tax bill, basically, now. And we'll know who to go after. It'll be whoever issues the card, because they know whether somebody's tax exempt or not.
Got it.
The person who owns an unattended facility has absolutely no idea who's really filling up there.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? Okay, we will see you in a couple weeks. Thank you very much. We'll close the public hearing on Legislative Concept 31. And I'm going to open the public hearing on Legislative Concept 32 and ask Patrick to give us that brief overview.
And I'm going to open the public hearing up on Legislative Concept 82.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair. LC32 and LC82 requires persons to provide proof of legal presence in the United States and Social Security numbers before the Department of Transportation may issue, renew, or replace a driver's license, driver permit, or identification card. It has a number of other provisions related to that. It permits a person to use a photograph on file for issuance renewal. It permits ODOT to provide directs them to provide an ombudsman service to applicants for driver license, driver permit, or identification cards, and this measure has an emergency clause and would take effect upon passage.
Okay. Thank you very much. What I'm going to do is I'm going to close public hearing and open a work session on LC32.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
I move that we approve LC32 for introduction as a Senate bill in the February special session.
And Senator Starr has moved the introduction of LC32 for consideration by the legislature in the February 2008 session. And again, colleagues, this does not signal support or opposition to the measure. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. I'm going to reopen the public hearing on LC32 and with your permission, Madam Chair, we would ask Heidi Altmaier from Legislative Council, Tom McClellan from the Department of Motor Vehicles, and Chris Warner from the Governor's Office to come forward and help us, everyone in the room, and all of you who are out in other parts of the room, to listen in, and we're going to get an explanation of what's in this bill so we can all have an understanding of how to comment on it as we move forward. And I don't know what's probably the best way to go. We're going to have some detail from Heidi on the bill. Would you prefer, Mr. Warner, to go first to kind of give us the 40,000 square foot view of how you see us proceeding and how this ties in? Because colleagues, and for those of you in the audience, as you know about the governor's executive order, which is taking effect related to this issue, it does have the force of law, so that is the law now. The question is, does the legislature need to do anything else besides that or make some changes in it? This will be, it will require legislative action if we're to do anything different than the executive order. So, Mr. Warner, welcome, and perhaps you give us your perspective from the governor's office and how you see making this executive order work.
Sure.
Chair Metzger, Chair Beyer, members of the committee, Chris Warner with the Governor's Office. What I will probably do is quickly kind of give you a little bit of background on the executive order, and then in terms of Tom's testimony, he kind of outlined the differences between the executive order and where these LCs go and exactly what changes to law or whatever need to be made in order to implement the legal presence standard as the LC does. In November of last year, Governor Kulongoski issued Executive Order 0722, and 0722 dealt with the standards for driver's licenses and identification cards and permits in terms of the standards of the documentation that's necessary in order to prove identity. We are in the process of, there was a public hearing held in December, and we are looking at adoption by the Transportation Commission in January. January 17th, I think, is the date that we're looking at implementation by the Transportation Commission, with the effective date being February 4th of this year. Certainly, one of the things I think we've stressed at the beginning with the executive order, it wasn't about legal presence. What this executive order dealt with was the documentation that was necessary in order for folks to prove their identity. And DMV has broad authority in terms of taking a look at those documents. In fact, what we did at the executive order was to actually just change the list of documents that are necessary. So in our mind, this was less about legal presence, but more about the documentation necessary in order to issue driver's licenses, identification cards, and permits. We are, one of the things that we found is that Oregon had become kind of an anomaly among states with the most permissive standards for issuing the driver's licenses. So we found that we had become kind of a magnet from folks from other states coming here, and we wanted, and the governor felt very strongly that we needed to make the standards more in line with what are the AMVA standards, which is the American Association of Motor Vehicle Administrators. So we tried to get the standards that we use in terms of documentation necessary from Oregon consistent with other states and with the rest of the country. We still, I think, under the Real ID standard, if you will, what is promulgated today, we still wouldn't be considered a legal presence state because of the executive order. I think it would take some kind of statutory passage by something from the legislature in order for that to happen. So if you don't mind, Senator, I would turn it over to Tom if he wants to talk about the differences between the executive order and the technical questions, or I can answer any questions first. So
let's see, first of all, and we'll keep you here for a bit, but if there are any questions immediately. Yes, thank you, Senator.
People that are moving from another state and their documentation is in that other state, before they could get an Oregon driver's license, would have to retrieve that documentation or have it sent from the previous state. Is that correct?
I'll let Tom answer that, but my understanding is if you have a valid driver's license from another state, I don't think you would need to get any more documentation.
That's true. Okay. Thank you.
Yes. Yes, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Warner. The effective date of the executive order, what was the thought process around that date?
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, what the governor had asked the department to do was to take a look when we issued the executive order in November, what would be the earliest date that we could get it implemented in terms of trying to educate the members of the public, members of the department, so the staff knows what they're doing, and this is the date that they came up with in terms of the earliest that they could get it implemented. So that was what we tried to do. And one other thing I should say, that this is a temporary rule that takes effect for 180 days. We will go into permanent rulemaking after this, but this is the temporary rule that the governors and the DMV is, we're hoping, will implement next week.
Okay. Any questions? Okay, and I think before we go to Mr. McClellan, just I think a point of a clarification, because there has been a number of things written on this this topic the last number of days, and I think I want to clarify for the members and also of the committee, as well as those in the public, is that to kind of understand the legal situation of the executive order and the legislation, the executive order issued by the governor does have the force of law, so it actually is the law. But what I think is important for those of us in the legislature to understand is where the governor needs some additional clarity in the law to effect the result of that executive order. It really is up to us, our responsibility, to make sure that that either that legislation via executive order or a version of it as we pass from the legislature is clear, articulate, and can be understood by the public and can meet the needs. And I think as Ms. Altmaier will go through and Mr. McClellan, there are a few things, as the governor acknowledges, that we'd like to have in the executive order that requires the legislature to make it clear. For example, we'll talk about some of these things, the eight-year license and other issues that are very prescriptive. And so there is, it is important that the legislature take whatever action the legislature does is to ensure that the public has clarity of what we will be doing going forward. And we're going to get kind of an overview of what those differences are and then hopefully work collaboratively to try and solve them. So with that, Mr. McClellan, would you like to have Heidi go through the bill first? Would that be easier?
Have her go through the bill.
Okay, then we'll go with Heidi Altmaier from Legislative Council. She drafted the bill, and again, it is the House has introduced the bill, so it's identical, so we're talking about the same piece of legislation, folks, if you're looking at 32 and 82. Heidi, welcome. I know that you've worked on this very hard. We appreciate your efforts the last couple of months.
Thank you, Chair Metzger, Chair Beyer, members of the committee. Good afternoon. I'm Heidi Altmaier with the Office of Legislative Counsel, and I am here today to go over LCs 32 and 82. And Chair Metzger is correct. At least as of today, they are both exactly the same. So what I would like to do is just go over the nuts and bolts and the key parts. As you can tell, it's about 34 pages long, and it feels a little bit weighty, but most of that is really conforming amendments, so we can really just hit on the three or four most pertinent parts and really have a strong understanding of what these drafts do. So with that, let's just dive right into Section 2. And at the heart of what these drafts do is add to the list of requirements that a person must meet in order to receive a driver license, driver permit, or identification card. Currently in statute, as you know, for a driver's license, for example, you have to be at least 16. You have to be mentally and physically capable of safely driving a car. You have to show what your name is and how old you are. So what this bill will do is say that in addition to that, and this does require legislative action, that we will also now be requiring a person to show that they are legally present in the United States. So looking at Section 2, it starts off just by saying, prior to issuing, renewing, or replacing, so at all three stages, for a driver license, permit, or identification card, the department shall require, it's not a may, but a shall, provide that a person provide proof of both legal presence and Social Security number, or if the person is not eligible for a Social Security number, a statement or proof that the person is not eligible. In subsection 2, it goes on to talk about the department will determine by rule what documents it will accept to prove legal presence, to prove Social Security number, and to prove that a person, or if the person doesn't have one, to a statement of some kind that they're not eligible for one. In Section 3, the draft has created temporary cards for those who are here legally, but for a temporary time, such as a student visa. They're here for 2 years, and they're allowed to have their cards then for 2 years. If it's an indefinite amount of time, say they're authorized to stay for as long as their education, they're completing their education, then they're allowed to have one for 1 year. And then when they, and they're eligible to come back in and renew those cards if their stay is extended. Then going on to subsection 4, the department must verify the Social Security numbers with the United States Security Administration. And then finally, if a person has previously, so this is not typically going to be for a person who's getting their cards for the first time, but a person has proven that they're a citizen or proven that they're a legal permanent resident and also had a verified Social Security number, then they don't have to come back and re-prove everything all over again once the department has verified everything. going on to Section 6 of the bill on page 4. And prior to issuing, renewing, or replacing any of these cards, the department shall verify with the issuing agency. So they get the passport, they get the birth certificate, and they go verify with the government agency that these are valid documents. And then we get to skip to page 13. So what you've added on page 13, it's ORS 807-110, is the requirement that the person give the department their full legal name. So they're supposed to give them their name or their true name now, but no longer can they go in and put Bubba on their license. They got to give them the true full legal name, which is also a real ID requirement. And if you look on page 14, we have some changes to the law that are related to driver licenses, but aren't related to legal presence. These are just fixes and exceptions we wanted to add in. So the first is that currently a person may opt out of taking a photo, usually for religious reasons. It was suggested that we'd also like to have an exception for a photograph who's already on file, possibly for a person who's serving overseas, can't come in to get their photo taken, but want to renew their license. So, and the department's already got it on file. They'll just plop it onto the new one. And also, then the next exception would be for biometric data. And so you wanted to, which is on page 16. When the biometric data collection statute was drafted, we forgot to also include the exception for the photo. So we just wanted to harmonize the two, because already the person can opt out of taking a photo, but under the biometric, in order to collect biometric data, you have to take a photo. So they wanted to exempt that person from both statutes. And that the biometric data collection doesn't go into effect. It's not operative until July 1st of this year.
Hey, I'm going to stop just for a moment. Representative Gilman had a question.
Now, while we're talking about the photo,
yes.
I read an article about Real ID.
Yes.
Some good news. It sounds like 50-year-olds won't have to worry about being compliant until 2017.
Correct.
It's good news. The photo, it says, though, will be taken at the application before the license is issued. Is that what we're saying here?
Chair, Representative Gilman, no. This is a separate issue. This is just for the folks who, for certain reasons that department's laid out by rule, want to opt out of having their photo taken. And that's separate and different from a real ID compliant. And that person wouldn't have a real ID compliant card at that time if they didn't have a photo on there, as far as I understand. But Tom might be able to.
Chair Metzger, Representative Gilman. In the 2005 session, there was a bill that had a biometric with facial recognition and central issuance for us. The facial recognition part takes effect this summer. And once that takes effect, and the way the law was written, you would have to have a new photo taken in order to get an original or a renewal or a replacement. If the person is out of country, out of state, and is not able to come to Oregon to get that renewal or replacement, we would like to be able to either issue a valid without photo card, which we do today, or use a photo that's already on file for that individual so that they can continue to have a valid photo license in that other location. That's the real intent behind those provisions in the draft.
Thank you very much.
Senator Stark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Similar question, and I think you might have answered this, but if we can be a little bit more specific, it would be great. How does this particular provision interface with Senate Bill 640? And my initial thought is that it weakens the collection of that biometric data. And potentially weakens the security of the driver's license document itself. Can you comment on that?
Chair Metzger, Senator Starr, we can still run that photo against our entire database if we wanted to see if there are multiple photos of that individual in our database. That could still possibly be done at the time we issued.
Okay, Mr. Chair, follow up. You would make this legislator more comfortable if you make that commitment on the record right now that you will run those photographs to make sure that you don't have multiple photographs with different
names. At the time of issuance.
At the time of issuance.
And the reason I'm a bit hesitant is we're so close to the final requirements on that particular system, and I'm not sure if that's built into it. So I will go back and check to make sure that is happening.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
The issue is that we know for a fact that we have thousands of fraudulent driver's licenses throughout the state of Oregon based on court cases in my home city of Hillsborough.
Mm-hmm.
And it's critically important as those driver's licenses that are out there come up for renewal that we use the tools that are in this law and in the laws that we passed in Senate Bill 640 in, 2005, I think.
Okay.
That we use those tools to get those driver's licenses out of the mm-hmm. out of the public. So as you go through the process of your rulemaking, either you do it in your rulemaking or we have to do it in the statute and probably in this bill that we're gonna work on next month. So I think it's I think additional conversation I think needs to happen between this committee as it relates to this issue and this particular section in this bill or through the rulemaking process. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator. Go ahead, continue.
Some of the conforming amendments just do name changes so that we don't confuse these new temporary cards with what already exists. For example, the department currently gives out or can give out, but assuming the person is eligible, hands a person an applicant temporary card. It's basically the card stock that the person gets when they first get their license while the department is figuring out the documents and making sure that that person's really eligible. And right now, because it's called an applicant temporary, we didn't want to confuse that with the temporary cards that will be issued to folks who are here legally for a short period of time. So we're going to call them interim cards. And additionally, some other conforming amendments change or add parking identification cards to confuse that with the regular identification cards. So with that, we can skip all the way to page 33 and to the final section.
Thank you very much. Heidi, which section were you just referring to with the temporary?
I'm sorry.
Which section were you just referring to with the temporary card? Thank you. I was trying to get where you were in the bill.
Oh. I was just breathing through the sections between page 16 and page 33.
I was trying to get to the language you're referring to. We were just referring to a temporary card that would be issued. In the interim,
sorry. Page 16.
Thank you.
Can you look at?
Page
16,
page 26.
Thank you very much.
Section 18.
Thank you.
19.
I appreciate your breezing through it. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for allowing me to clarify.
20. Yeah. 21. Those are the interim, but we're not going to call interim cards.
Gotcha.
And sections 22, 23, 24, 25, are the parking identification cards. And there are some other conforming amendments. ORS 97 and 953 talks about what a license is. We just want to add in the Section 2 requirement so that it's clear in that section as well. Same with identification card. And then that brings us to Section 27.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Johnson.
Before she proceeds on to Section 27, I just want to go back to the parking ID cards. These are to reconcile the mirror tags that allow for handicap parking. Is that understanding correct, or is there something different here?
There's nothing different substantively. It's just a name change.
Okay. I guess the question I'm asking is,
what do they do?
Yeah, will it, if someone stopped for parking in a handicapped spot, then will they check it if they're intercepted at the time that they've done it? Would they have a card that would indicate permission to do so?
I'm actually not.
Sure. I'm not quite sure I understand what the parking identification card is. Maybe you give it a little bit more.
Oh, what it is. I'm not sure offhand.
Okay.
I'd be happy to read it and
thank
get back
you.
To you.
Let's bring it back. 22, 23,
Moving on to Section 27. What this says is direct the department to provide ombudsman services with existing resources to help the folks who would otherwise be eligible for a license and who certify under penalty of perjury that they are citizens and they are legally present in the United States. What these ombudsman services are to do or to help these folks who have difficulty coming up with the documents, because the documents are maybe difficult to obtain, such as a person's birth certificate or passport or whatever documents the department comes up with by rule, that will satisfy that requirement. And there is potentially a percentage of the population that may have difficulty getting those documents. And what the section will do is provide them services and also provide them with temporary cards for a time to be set by the department so that they can still drive while they're hunting for these documents that they need. And then finally, there's an EMIR
question.
And it's effective on
Senator Monroe.
I'm assuming these ombudspersons would be bilingual.
It does not say that specifically in the bill. That doesn't mean that they can't be, but...
well, it would be kind of silly for them not to be, I think.
Chair, Senator Monroe, currently it's not specific. I'm sure that would be for the department to come up with, or to be placed in the bill if you'd like.
Well, Mr. Chair, when we look at this bill during the session, I'd want an answer to that from the department, whether that would be their intent or whether or not we would need to specify it in the language.
Thank you, Senator. Oh, Senator Starr's question, then we'll...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The section 3 of subsection 3 of section 27. As I read this particular section, it provides the department an open-ended opportunity to provide a driver's license to basically anybody who can't prove that they're here legally.
To someone, they have to have under subsection 2, they have to have said under penalty of perjury that they believe that they're here legally and that they are. Let me actually pull up that language. Not provide services. But yes, you're correct. Under subsection 3, provide a temporary cards for a time determined by rule who's unable to produce documentation. So right now that is fairly broad.
So I read that correctly then, that subject to whatever rule the department were to promulgate, this provides opportunity for a driver's license to anybody that walks in the door and can't prove that they're here legally.
Yeah, and the person must otherwise be eligible for one, so that means that the person should be here legally.
Yeah, but you use the word notwithstanding to begin that section, so it basically eliminates the rest of the bill.
So yeah, you're correct. Right now it's broad.
So, Mr. Chair, I think that as we go into the session, that there's some parameters that we ought to put in the statute as it relates to this particular issue. I understand the issue. Inevitably, there's going to be Oregonians that were born overseas, and it's difficult to getting a birth certificate or other documents. It might take 2 or 3 months to get those documents. So I understand that issue.
Yeah.
But I think we need to put some parameters around it. And I would prefer, Mr. Chair, to put it in the statute rather than allow it open-ended for the department to promulgate rules. So,
yeah. Thank you, Senator. Yes, and you're absolutely right. That is the point of that. And one of the good reasons we wanted to get the bill out early so we could start working on amendments. The purpose is to, we don't want to deny a legal citizen of the United States who comes there and all of a sudden can't walk out the door and drive because there was a typographical error on their Social Security number or something else. And we do know that from the numbers that we have from DMV, between 1% and 4% of our of legal Oregonians would fit that category. So we're potentially talking 90 to 150,000 people. So we have to find some parameter to make sure that they understand that, they're making a legal commitment if we're going to help them find them, what's wrong. But Senator Starr, your point is very valid. And between now and hopefully our next meeting, maybe some amendments might be drafted that working with Mr. McClellan to further tighten that. Yes, Heidi.
Yeah. finally we have the emergency clause, and that's it.
Okay, I think what we'll do is we'll go to Mr. McClellan to talk. What I've asked him to come to just discuss, okay, now how is this different from the governor's executive order? How does it overlay? Where does it duplicate? Where does it go beyond? And are there any Swiss cheese holes that still have some conflict so we can have an understanding of that? So, welcome.
Thank you, Chair Metzger. Members of the committee, my name is Tom McClellan. I'm the acting administrator at the Oregon DMV. Let me just first start by talking about the governor's executive order and what we are doing right now. As Mr. Warner indicated, we are implementing that executive order effective February 4th. It will begin requiring applicants to provide a Social Security number that we will verify with the Social Security Administration. That is new, but that is consistent with the bill that we are considering a concept today. It is the same. Before we would issue a driver's license, driver permit, or an identification card. We'll use a system that somewhere close to 48 states are using right now. It's called the Social Security Online Verification System, or SOLV. So it's well-tested, well-used, and we've been using it for commercial driver license applicants since February of last year, and to great success. So, alternatively, if a person does not have a verifiable Social Security number, they may submit a signed written statement that they've never been issued a Social Security number, and then they would provide documentation to prove their identity and date of birth. That list of documents is much shorter, much more limited than the list of documents for those who have a verifiable Social Security number. Essentially, that is what the executive order does. It's those pieces, verifying Social Security numbers and changing the list of documents that are acceptable to prove identity. And we move from a multiple document process to a single document plus an SSN. If that Social Security number is verifiable and you can provide us one of the identity documents on that list, you go through and we issue and you've met all the other requirements. I don't want to slip by those. Some people have thought that's all you have to do. You still have to pass all the tests and pay the fees and all those types of things, which is actually a simpler process than what we have today with two primary documents, or a primary document and two secondary documents, or a supplemental list with three or four different things. And it's much more easy to administer, I'll tell you that, and should be easier to communicate to people. Now, it will cause difficulties for people who don't have those documents. And a number of people will not have those. And what we are doing in anticipation of that is something like an ombudsman approach, where we're creating a special unit within our organization to handle these special calls that will come in where people need help. Where do I go to fix this problem with my Social Security number? My name has changed. Who do I contact? Who do I call? What forms do I need to fill out? I want to apply for a passport. How do I do that? How much is it? Hundreds of questions we know we will probably get. But this unit will be trained to help those people, and as quickly as we can, we'll route those calls to that unit who can provide that special support. So that's our intent. That is, like I said, very similar to the ombudsman concept that we see in this bill. The legislative concept doesn't specify one person or six or ten. It says a service shall be provided, and that's what we're going to find out. We're going to test drive that effective this month in preparation for the rules going into effect in February. Everything else she described is outside the scope of the executive order. So. If you want me to run through those
please,
again.
Please, yes. We want to know what the differences are.
Okay. Starting with verification with the issuing agency of any documents that are provided to prove one's identity, we will be verifying the Social Security number, but we are not verifying immigration documents, passports, birth certificates, military papers. We have no capability to do that today. That is new. That is a requirement that the bill would have, effective upon passage, which is a concern for us because of the time it takes to implement and for systems that don't exist today. There is not a national birth certificate system that we could verify against. There's not a national passport system that we could verify. And so those systems have to be developed, and then we need time to connect up to those and to begin to use them.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, yes.
Thank you.
Given that information, do we have any idea, number one, of the cost of what it's going to take to develop the systems necessary to do this verification? And in the meantime, what would we be doing with, particularly in terms of trying to verify non-Social Security documents?
Mr. Chair, Representative Buckley, that is a concern for us in the way the language, the final language that you approve. We'd like to have something that suggests that as the systems are available or were feasible or possible to verify, on the cost side, we will estimate what we believe it would cost to implement, like the immigration verification system. It's called the SAVE system, Department of Homeland Security provides. We can get you an estimate for that because it exists and states are using it. The others, it's a bit more difficult to estimate costs or to even anticipate when those will be available.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. McClellan, as I read your testimony and hear you and your, give your testimony, it seems to me as I've read ahead a little bit here that your recommendations coincide with dates and information as related to the Real ID Act, and we got the final rules today from DHS. As you proceed, if you can, at points that make sense, talk about how this bill and the actions that the department is taking or plans to take will bring the state of Oregon toward, I think, eventual compliance with Real ID.
Okay. To continue?
Well, I think I want to go to a question from Representative Tomei and then continue. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going back to the cost. So I'm assuming other states are using these systems to verify the information. So can't you extrapolate from what the costs are to them what it might be to us?
Mr. Chair, Representative Tomei, there are two systems basically available today. One is to verify Social Security numbers, which we are preparing to implement this month, effective February 4th. The other system that's available for state motor vehicle agencies is to verify the alien registration number on immigration documents. I think about 40%, maybe half the states are using that system today. That's the one we could get you a pretty good estimate on the cost. It's the other documents that are on these lists that we can't verify electronically with the issuing agency because they haven't created the systems or set it up to handle the volumes, you know, millions of inquiries that they're going to get from 50 states and the District of Columbia.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
That is actually where Homeland Security, Department of Homeland Security, is going with its federal funding to try to develop some of that infrastructure. And the money, although they say it's available for states, it's primarily to build infrastructure for these types of systems that states can use.
Great.
Mr. Chair, I jumped over one in my description here. It's the temporary driver's license with a limited length of stay type of an expiration, depending on how long the person is in this country to issue it to expire when that immigration document expires. That requires statutory change. That is not something we're doing in the executive order. That is something that's in the Real ID Act. Make sure to cover all these. Also in the LC32, there's a requirement that the department collect and put on the license an applicant's full legal name. Today the language says true name. The full legal name phrase is what's in the Federal Real ID Act. It's a trigger phrase for us to indicate you need to collect a much bigger name of first, middle, last name, and surname. The AAMVA, this Motor Vehicle Agency Association, recommends you have space in your data fields of 125 characters for those extremely long names. That means system implications for us, if that's what's intended by this. I don't believe it was. I believe, and I've got this in my testimony, I believe what you want is just to get the language the same and let us determine what you want for determining what a name is, and that we collect on the application the full name, but only show on the license a truncated amount, a reasonable amount. so you don't have micro print on our driver's licenses. I think that's what you intend.
Yeah, I think you're right, Mr. McClellan. Actually, it was requested by the Department of Justice on behalf of the executive branch, that language. But again, it was to match up documents and names, not necessarily for someone who has 126 characters. Boy, it's hard to say that, you know, necessarily in the database to print on the license, but that was the intent, yes.
We talked a little bit about the issuing a license without a photo or issuing a license with a previous photo. That is not in the federal law, in the Federal Real ID Act. That is only specific to Oregon and our concerns about the implementation of the biometrics, and I understand the concern that was raised.
Yes, Senator.
So the Real ID Act requires a photo, and a person that gets a driver's license without a photo under Oregon, under this bill, or that driver's license would not be Real ID compliant, and that person could not use the driver's license to board our airplane at the end of 2009, provided we get an extension from DHS.
Mr. Chair, or Senator Starr, I believe that's true. I haven't gone through the entire document yet to determine that is the case, but requiring a photo was part of the act. And also, a photo at the beginning of the process is also in the federal law, so that which changes our flow within our offices significantly. Instead of at the tail end we take a picture, we'll take a picture right at the beginning when they become an applicant for us. That's not in your legislative concept. That would be in the federal law. I'm not sure how you're going to keep all this straight.
Yeah. Well, Senator Starr brought the final rules, and stack is the final rule.
And after a day, he has them memorized.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, can I just clarify that question?
Yes.
Is there anything currently in your rules right now that would prohibit you from taking a picture at the start of the process? Do you need a legislative change in order to make that change?
Senator Metzger, Representative Buckley, I don't believe it requires a statutory change.
Thank you.
But it's a procedural change and a cost as far as the administration of the process for us. I think that's about it. As I look through my notes, I think I've covered pretty much the differences. We have concerns about implementation dates, and the emergency taking effect in March doesn't work real well. We're recommending a January 09 effective date for the verification of immigration documents to give us close to a year for that. Issuing of a temporary or license or permit that expires in less than 8 years, we'd like to have until January of 2010. The regulations just came out from the federal government would have December 31st of 2009. That's a provision that would have to be in place. Both that and the legal presence requirement would need to be in place for a state to be compliant, assuming we request an extension till the end of 2009. And then we need to clarify what's meant by the use of full legal name. And if there's system requirements there, we would need to push that out considerably.
I'm going to thank you, Mr. McClellan. I'm going to ask Mr. Warner, just now that we've gone through, to give us your any comments from the governor's office in terms of the overlay of this with his executive order.
Yeah.
If he has any other comments about this, we've obviously heard some concerns we'll have to talk about in terms of, because in some cases we are more restrictive than the executive order, as Mr. McClellan has pointed out, and see if this, at least as a starting point, meets with where the governor is going, or any other concerns you
sure.
may have.
Chair Metzger, members of the committee, we certainly one of the things I think the governor has been pretty upfront about is that we have been anxious for these rules in terms of the implementation of Real ID to take it to the next step. I think the governor has felt as though that he would like to bring the state in compliance. We put forward a bill in the 07 session to do that. It didn't quite make it across the finish line. But we certainly want to see how the interface between the new rules as we get a chance to take a look at them with the executive order. And I think we have kind of a triangulation here of what's going on. So we certainly want to you know, move forward with implementation if we can of the Real ID Act. So we want to make sure that whatever we do with legal presence is consistent with that. We don't want to do anything that's going to, you know, put us behind the eight ball anymore in terms of Real ID compliance. So I think that we look forward to working with you in this bill in terms of, you know, addressing the condition or the concerns that the department has and trying to work it in terms of the bigger framework of the Real ID Act. So I think that's what I would say at this point.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Warner. Any questions for any of the three panelists? Well, we will be hearing a lot more. Thank you very much, all of you, yeah, for coming. And Heidi, if you could, if you don't mind just hanging around in the back or outside just in case for the next 30 minutes or so, I would appreciate it, just in case anybody else has any questions about the language. Is that okay? And then we'll, like, you can get back to your office, you know, at least by 3. How's that?
That's very good. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Thatcher is here, and I'm going to ask Representative Thatcher to come forward. Do we have any other legislator here? Okay, and then we'll start with some testimony and proceed for the next hour and a half on that for our first day.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Metzger and members of the committee, for allowing me to weigh in on some of these issues, these concepts that are here before us. I'm sure you know that this has been one of my hot issues for the last 3 years or so, and I am cautiously optimistic that this is this legislation will be a good thing for Oregon.
Please identify yourself for the record. I know it's been a while.
I'm sorry. It has been a while. I feel a little out of practice. I'm Representative Kim Thatcher. I'm from Kaiser.
Thank you.
I am optimistic because if passed, this would be a huge step forward toward securing our main form of state-issued identification, and of course it would be a big step towards adhering to the national standards. I did have a couple suggestions or concerns about some of the language, and some of them have been brought up already. I think overall the intent is good, and I hope the results will be effective. So far, I believe this plan will it significantly reduces the likelihood that people who are in the country illegally will get a driver's license, and it will help combat identity theft and other criminal activity, especially when it comes to verification of the Social Security number. But remember, just because you have a Social Security number does not mean you're necessarily a legal resident, because after conversations, interestingly enough, with high-ranking officials within the Social Security Administration, they have issued millions of Social Security cards over the past several decades and continue to do so under certain conditions. There is concern, and I think some of it is being addressed. So I was happy to hear from the governor's representative that they do have the intention to come into compliance with the new national standards. We just need to proceed carefully, make sure that this bill doesn't conflict and that we are concluding and giving all the tools to the DMV that we need to as a legislature to allow them to verify some of these documents as systems become available and the infrastructure that's being built, and to allow DMV to come into compliance with the federal law. I do like the way it proposes. It also ties in the temporary licenses with the temporary visa stays, so that length of time is tied together where it isn't with executive rule. I do have a concern about some of these things DMV can carry out by rule. Some of these things were mentioned by Senator Starr earlier. I prefer that we spell some of these things out in statute. For example, which documents are acceptable for identification purposes are set out to be accomplished by rule. We should be using the standards set by the American Association of Motor Vehicle Administrators, or AMVA, as they are experts in this area, and they would be consistent with what would be required federally. Over the years, AMBA, for example, has recommended against accepting foreign birth certificates and consulate cards for identification. However, Oregon DMV has chosen to allow those documents in the past. So I would be more comfortable if there are certain parameters about how the rules would be made by DMV. And I was happy to hear that the DMV administrator for our state said that the method for verification of Social Security numbers would be through the SOLVE system, and I didn't think that was very clear in the bill, but he did put it on record. That was the intent. I'm also concerned about the folks who have been rushing in to get their driver's licenses and ID cards before the new rule kicks in February 4th. I was wondering if there's any way to put an amendment to run random checks maybe on some of the people we have on system, so we don't have to wait an entire 8 years to flush the system of those who may not be qualified to have a driver's license here in Oregon. And just a minor point, maybe just a question for DMV, perhaps they can answer later on. Will drivers be able to use their current license, the license obtained before these rules come into effect, to obtain another license 8 years from now? And I also heard it mentioned that they will be accepting driver's licenses from other states, perhaps from other states that do not have the same rules and do not have legal presence. And that seems like something that should be addressed. And finally, we have the collision of overlapping deadlines, and I would urge all of us to move towards implementation as soon as possible. The new rules ordered by the governor are scheduled, as we know, to take effect the day we start our special session in February. Yet we know the Legislative Council's office is now saying these rules won't pass totally without statutory authority from the legislature. DMV has been stating that for years. But the bottom line is, rather than rethreading the past of what we could have or should have done, we do need to move forward and seize this opportunity and do the right thing now. We should bring Oregon in line with the new federal rules, and we should do it right the first time so we don't have to keep coming back and revisiting this issue later on and adding to it. If we cannot address all these things now, then I will support the changes that we're proposing, at least in this legislation, because I believe it is a huge step in the right direction. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Thatcher. Any questions for Representative Thatcher? Okay, thank you for coming. Okay, again, I want to reiterate what I mentioned earlier. We have about an hour and a half in our session left for our opening day, and there will be multiple hearings on this bill. This is just the introductory day. I'm going to go and bring a few people up at a time based on how they signed up. We have the list of those who signed up, and we'll keep that in our file. Also, again, if you have some written testimony that you would like to provide so that we can consider that before we have our next hearing on the bill and the next hearing after that, it would be great if members had that as we are in between hearings to read your comments. That would be absolutely wonderful. And then as we move into session, when we are now into regular daily meetings of the committee, hopefully everyone who wants to contribute to the discussion will have an opportunity to do that. Because of the fact that I do want to hear in this opening day as many people as possible, we're going to limit the opening comments to 2 minutes so that we can have as many people. I'd rather have 30 people comment in an hour and a half than 10 people comment in an hour and a half. And I'm sure if you're 30th on the list, you'd like to have your opportunity as fast as possible. So I'm going to ask to keep to that because we do have numerous people signed up. With that, let's ask in the order that I have written here, Jim Ludwig, Tim Campbell, Ted Campbell, I'm sorry, and Jim Elvin to come forward. I'll give you each 2 minutes, and then we'll go to our next threesome.
Mr. Chair, yes. While they're getting settled, yes, and before we get started, I just want to take this opportunity to thank everybody for coming and let you know that your testimony is very important to all of us, and we certainly respect you and appreciate you coming, and hopefully that's the direction that this testimony will go, respect for everybody. There will be many opportunities between now and any implementation of bills for testimony, and we appreciate hearing from you, and if you can't testify in person, please contact us.
Thank you. Good comments, Representative Beyer. Welcome.
Chair Metzger, Chair Beyer, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jim Ludwig. I'm president of Oregonians for Immigration Reform. We're here in support of both of these concepts and urge you to move them forward to be debated in the upcoming legislature. Currently, Oregon is the only state on the West Coast that openly acknowledges it issues driver's licenses to illegal aliens. It's one of only 7 states that doesn't verify legal presence, and one of only 4 states that doesn't verify a Social Security number. And despite the events of 9/11, we continue to issue 8-year driver's licenses to people here who are on 6-month visas. Because of all this, Oregon has become a magnet for ID theft, the methamphetamine trade, illegal immigration, and potential terrorists. I'd like to quote from the Governor's 2004 Public Safety Review Report, quote, "Oregon does not require people to prove legal presence as part of the eligibility process. This causes Oregon's list of acceptable identity documents to be more inclusive than other states because we can't limit to only documents available to the United States. Consequently, some documents are more easily counterfeited or accepted in Oregon. This has led Oregon to become a magnet for people here illegally who find it increasingly difficult to obtain driver's license in other states. This increases the risk that DMV will issue ID cards and driver's license to people who aren't who they say they are, and that more fraudsters will come to Oregon from out of state." Close quote. I know you're going to have someone raise the issue of insurance, and I'd like to quote from a November 22, 2004 report from the Oregon Department of Motor Vehicles under uninsured drivers, and it's under the report is called legal presence. Quote, "Other states' experiences indicate that requiring legal presence does not increase in uninsured motorists. The Information Institute, Insurance Information Institute, and the Insurance Research Council do not identify legal presence as a major contributing factor for states' uninsured rate, but instead rank the cost of premiums, enforcement, and economics factors higher." Close quote.
Thank you, Mr. Ludwig. You went past your 2 minutes, but I appreciate that very much, and we will hear more from you. As you can appreciate, we want to hear from as many people in this opening day. And again, a reminder, we're going to have lots of hearings, but I want to get some introductory comments as much as possible. Sir, welcome.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, Board, my name is Ted Campbell. I am the State Director of the Minuteman Civil Defense Corps. At the DMV hearing at the fairgrounds, I heard someone say that having driver's licenses makes them a number and accountable in Oregon. Actually, having a Social Security number makes you accountable all over the United States, and we need to pursue that. I have a lot of issues, but I'm only going to address the driver's license issue. Meth and drug dealers get protection from Oregon by they can go in and get a driver's license, and then if a police officer stops them, he cannot search them without probable cause, where if they don't have a license, they can be searched. Senator Monroe, you talked about bilingual. In the state of Oregon, they represent over 130, or recognize over 130 languages as being legal languages there. That person would have to have a knowledge bank because you have to represent all of them if you give priority to any of them. So driving in Oregon is a privilege, not a right. You earn the privilege by taking the test and doing everything, and the law says you need to do it this way. The governor's put the law. We want you to do that. I, like I said, I don't want to get off this, but we need to support this law and carry it forward the way it is and make sure everybody has a Social Security number. That also helps pay your taxes and everything else. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell. Thank you very much, and thank you for honoring our time frame. Mr. Elvin, are you in the audience? Do you wish to come up? Excuse me?
You have to go to work.
Okay. All right. Victoria Lewis, Eduardo Angulo, and Santiago Espinoza, please. Well, ladies first.
Okay. Okay, my name is Victoria Lewis. I am a member of the Oregon Coalition for Public Safety. I have here statistics from April 2007 by the Oregon Center for Public Policy and Immigration Policy Center. After you hear these points, you will see how illegal immigrants do contribute to Oregon's economy, and therefore they should continue to have driver licenses. One, because they pay $39 million save for unemployment insurance, which goes to other workers, not to undocumented workers, because they do not qualify. Two, Latinos who are undocumented pay way more than their share of Oregon income tax because all the dollars are taken from their pay, stays with the Oregon Department of Revenue. Invalid Social Security numbers mean there is no refunds available. So millions of dollars stay with the state of Oregon. Undocumented Latino workers pay $187 million in income taxes annually. In Oregon, undocumented workers put $2.5 billion in the economy as consumers of products and services. Do we want to lose that? Even the smallest business benefits when there is money poured into the economy. I think you agree that, with that. Undocumented workers do not qualify for Oregon Health Plan, food stamps, or temporary cash assistance. In conclusion, Oregon cannot afford to take away the right of undocumented people to driver's licenses. Oregon cannot afford to be an inhumane state, and the money from undocumented workers is very welcome to Oregon bureaucrats. The money from undocumented workers even goes to pay Governor Kulongoski, and I'm sure he appreciates his paycheck.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Lewis. And please, I want to remind the audience that we're in a hearing. This is not a rally for either side of any issue, so please respect both the witnesses and the discussion. Thank you very much. Yes, next. Welcome. Yes.
Good afternoon, Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Eduardo Angulo, and I am the chairman of the Salem-Kaiser Coalition for Equality. The coalition is made up of 9 Latino community organizations and also the Salem-Kaiser NAACP chapter. Our members are PECUN, CAUSA, the Pro-Immigrant Rights Coalition of Oregon, Mano a Mano Family Center, Latinos Unidos Siempre, our youth organization, Willamette University Meche students, Chemequera Juntos Club students, 100 Good People. I am here today representing over 40,000 Latino and minority residents of Marion County who are the backbone of the economic recovery of this county.
Can you move back a little from the microphone?
Is it too loud?
I'm so sorry. It kind of distorts the sound.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
As you read the papers and watch TV, it's easy to see our nation is on the brink of an economic recession. Our state of Oregon just now is coming out of its worst and longest economic recession in history. Chairman, members of the committee, just take a minute to think about the scenario I'm going to present to you.
You have 20 seconds left to present that.
Picture yourselves as legislators in the next 2 years dealing with the consequences of our nursery and agricultural industries without the Latino immigrant workforce, just as the states of Colorado, Oklahoma, and now Arizona had to deal with, now that they state legislators allow very small group of well-funded Americans to sequester the economic future of their state. Think of the devastating scenario that this can present to our state of Oregon.
Thank you very much. And just a reminder, I know you've been reading some written comments.
Yes.
If you have them available to submit, so if there was things we couldn't get to today, we would love to have it, and we'll make copies for the rest of
them. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Welcome.
Senators, State Representative, my name is Santiago Espinosa. Obviously, I'm from Dominican Republic, but I've been living in Salem for the last 22 years. Former baseball player for the California Angels. Anyways, the reason I'm here today is to tell you folks that what are these people are going to do if you just take their driver's license away. I mean, we're talking about people that are living here 10 years, 7 years. Obviously, they don't have any papers. So what are we going to do, throw them out? I don't think we can do that. And I hear someone talking about 9/11 from the Minutemen people. I just want to tell your folks that when we were strike in September 11, 2001, there was no Maria, Jose, or Guadalupe on those airplanes, okay? There was none. You don't see any Mexican, let's call it this way, named Osama bin Laden, al-Zarqawi, or al-Zawahiri, the second in command of Osama bin Laden. This is just horrible. I believe the decision of the executive order from Governor Kulongoski was wrong. Because, I mean, just think about it for a second, senators and state representatives. All these people that are living here 10 years, 7 years, what are they going to do? I mean, you got to take their, obviously, they didn't they didn't have driver's license, or they do have it, and you got to take it away. I mean, this is going to be horrible, because how are they going to bring ends meet to the table? I mean, think about that. This is going to be a tragedy. And another thing, this is going to create a public safety. And I believe that people are going to drive no matter what. I mean, I believe in the rule of law, okay? But if you take these driver's license away, they're going to drive anyway. It's going to create public safety. And not only that, I believe the crime rate in the state of Oregon is going to go up, because people, they gotta make their living any way they can. If they gotta have to rob a bank or do something crazy, they will, because you took their driver's license away.
Thank you, Mr. Espinosa. Thank you very much, sir. Thanks.
And can I get in another 5 seconds? I just want to show you something. I don't know where this is from. We have a police report online. I want you to have one of these things. This was all over Lancaster Drive, October last year. Someone is offering $10 for Mexican reproductive organ. Okay. And I want the media to know about this.
Okay, Mr. I have to close you off now. We're way off topic. Way off topic.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Sharon Bartu, Bridget Cook, and Victoria Lava. And if I can't read your writing, it's my fault. It's not your fault. I'm not a very good reader sometimes, so I apologize if I butcher one of your names. Metzger, my name means butcher in German, so it's probably one of the reasons why. Welcome.
Thank you. Honorable Senators and Representatives, Madam Chairman, Mr. Chairman, my name is Sharon Bartu. I used to be an immigration attorney for 9 years. I'll tell you a personal experience of mine. I know that it's so hard for anyone from the South American countries to obtain legal residence. There's three ways. You can be born in Cuba. You can have a parent, child, or brother or sister file an I-130 for you. And you can wait 15 to 25 years to get approval. Or you can marry a U.S. citizen, which now has very many complications in it. But back in January 28th of 1998, a young man tapped on my law window, and it was freezing rain, and he had no coat. I was with clients. I let him in. He needed me to help him get his green card through his wife. He had to run back through the rain because I couldn't drive him. He ran 4 miles round trip in the rain with no coat, and it was freezing rain and ice, to get his passport and his birth certificate. We filed his papers. We prepared his papers. We went to immigration at midnight on January 28th, 1998, and waited in line outside till 7 in the morning. He got his green card through his wife. He now owns a home. He works still 2 jobs. They always were working 2 jobs. If they weren't working 2 jobs, they were working 3 jobs, all my immigration clients. And they came to me because they wanted to be legal. He lets his wife stay home to take care of the family. I love these people. I want them to be able to work until the U.S. government makes immigration law reasonable, which it is not. And basically, I hope we don't have another Georgia where the crops rot in the fields because there's nobody to pick the crops because they've all been deprived of driving. And if they're driven to extremity, they will drive. And then if there's a crash, no insurance, who pays the bill? If you want to be practical, we will.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Please. This is the hearing part of your visit, so please. Okay, next. Thank you for coming.
Thank you. My name is Victoria Lara, and I represent the Oregon Coalition for Public Safety, and also I'm a member of LULAC. As Latinos and Oregonians, we are productive and active citizens of this state, and we also help to grow the state economy every single day. Latinos are very tired of being passive listeners or viewers of the things that are sharpening the economy of Oregon. Public policy must strive to ensure that we have the opportunity to be active speakers as well for something like this is going to happen. As you know, Latino population is the fastest growing group in Oregon State, and you're not going to stop that with these rules or any other rules. The Latino buying power just in Portland DMA area is calculated to be over $4 billion. As other persons say, the OCPB report showed that undocumented workers are close to 200,000 Latinos. And I don't understand how you let them work, let them contribute to the economy and put $2.5 billion a year and then don't let them drive and take care of their families and what they want to do. This is not, it doesn't make any sense. They also, these undocumented workers, pay $180 million a year, every year of taxes. Social Security taxes, $7 to $9 million. They also pay property taxes, Medicare taxes, $18 million. There also are estimated total of $136 million taxes paid by Oregon employers on behalf of these undocumented workers. And you and I know they're never going to see these taxes back because they can apply for that. You must stop Executive Order 0722 or build some order that's more comprehensive and make more sense. This doesn't make any sense. You know, maybe we don't have political power, but we have economy power. We do have that. And we are going to exercise that power. The needs of citizens cannot be reduced to the needs of personal political agendas. The policies to promote a better and fair community must take precedence over the pursuit of personal political power. Please work with us. We are here to work with you. Just treat us respectfully. Because we are Oregonians too, and we are a residents of Oregon State, as you are.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Welcome. And just a reminder, you don't have to get up real close to the mic because it does distort you. It's actually a very strong mic. So.
Thank you, first of all, for...
Your name, please.
My name is Veronica Hernandez, and I'm here to represent Bridget Cook, who is Executive Director of Adelante Mujeres. And Adelante Mujeres is an educational program for immigrant families. First, a statement in general about undocumented immigrants. Some people say they just need to get in line, like everyone else, and do it the right way. Well, let's make this very clear for the majority of undocumented immigrants. There is no line. There is no right way. There is no process for them to enter the country with proper authorization. There is no line for them to stand in. Second, if anyone believes that denying driving license to undocumented immigrants is going to deter them from being here, let me say this. No one sacrificed everything they own to come here. And now to turn around and go home right away just because they don't have a driver's license. No one risks death in the desert crossing the border to turn around and go home right now because they don't have a driver's license. Do you think they will turn around and go home because they don't have this document. Those here are here because it is the only alternative they can access to provide dignified life for the children. So, what will be the effects of government executive order? I'm so nervous. Oh my goodness. I'm not going to read this. But I want to tell you, that this order is going to affect family security. It is a lot of stress thinking that they need to go to work and maybe they won't come back home. And for the children who are at the school, maybe when they come back home, their father or mother, they won't be there because they stop, the police stopped them and they had to go to their countries and leave their children without any security in this country.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you. And again, a reminder, if you have any written testimony, or and if you want to prepare written testimony, if you don't have it today, and you want to prepare it before our next meeting on the 22nd, please do so, so we can have time to actually read larger words. Next up is Kevin Courtney and Andrea Meyer and Monica Rocky. Did I get close? Oh, good. Excellent. I got lucky once in a while.
My name is Kevin Courtney Vera. I am very happy to be an American. I am here to say that you have to change and take the law away because there are thousands of people that will be affected by it in Oregon. There are some points that I want you to know. My mom and dad are teachers and work so hard for all of their students. And even they come home very late because they're helping their students. And many of those students, their parents do not have social security numbers. I heard my parents talk about how all of the changes that you want to do, and those changes are affecting the lives of their students because their students are very worried about their future. I can see my parents' faces when they talk about that. I can see how hurt they are, too. I am in fifth grade, and I heard all of my classmates saying that their parents are very worried about what is happening with their driving license, and probably they won't have a way to go to work, and they won't have enough money to buy food. Many of my classmates are illegal, too. I'm an only child, and my parents have enough money to feed me, but to go to school and hear a child in fifth grade worries about not having enough money to buy food, that makes me very sad. Also, the same kid told me that he just has three pairs of pants, three pairs of shirts, and three underwears. He wears the same clothes every week. I can't imagine how poor he is. Also, my classmates talk to me about how tired their parents are every afternoon because of their hard work they do. Those parents are very tired because the kind of job that they do. They're the ones who go to work on the field. Those parents are the ones who go to pick strawberries, tomatoes, carrots, onions, apples, etc., etc.
Master Courtney, even though you're fifth grade, I've got to give everybody the same courtesy. I want you to know you do an excellent job. Where do your parents teach at?
In the Woodburn High School.
Okay, excellent. I see you have some written testimony. I want to hear the rest of it. So when we're done, if you could provide that, we will make copies for that, and then we will...
I have two copies.
Oh, one. Well, we will make a copy for everyone else. We have magic. We can do that. Thank you very much. Ms. Meyer, welcome.
Chair Metzger, Chair Beyer, members of the committee, Andrea Meyer, Legislative Director for the ACLU of Oregon. Okay, that's not testimony I want to follow, but I will. I've provided you all testimony. I understand I'm under a very strict amount of time, and I will try to adhere to that. I wanted, with the last 3 days, to review the legislation. You put forward an issue spot concerns we have, so that's what I've done. I'm also providing a letter from Chief Ron Louie, retired at Hillsboro. He could not be here today, but he wanted to point out and testify here today that he was opposed to this as a 33-year law enforcement officer, 20 years experiences of chief, that this will result in uninsured and unsafe drivers, that community activists and community meetings with him for decades have been the one issue of uninsured drivers, and that we should not confuse federal immigration law with our driver's licenses. And we echo those same concerns. One of the things I want to identify for you quickly, and I think you've heard it already in terms of the validity, verifying the validity
The validity and completeness of every document with the issuing agency. That is a real ID requirement, except under the new regs, and I haven't had a chance to read them, Senator Starr, but you and I have our homework this weekend. My nationals advise me that they've actually removed verification for birth certificates or street addresses. Real ID statute and real ID rules are no longer consistent. But this language in here isn't just issuing agencies like the state governments or national databases. It could be the private sector, residents, your PGE bill, and there's no duty that those businesses comply or assist you. So we would hope that would be removed. That's very, very much a burden. One thing that was skipped over, I believe, in the LC presentation of this was page 6 of the LC that creates a Social Security database. Now, and it's Section 7, and currently there is a requirement of Social Security database for commercial drivers, but I believe, and I haven't had a chance to verify it, that that may be required by federal law. I know of no federal requirement that you now create a new Social Security database for all of our Social Security numbers, which will be a gold mine for identity thieves. I urge you to delete that section. The biometric photograph, I want to dovetail my comments with the draft regulations that DMV has issued, and I've just reviewed the final version today, and they did address one of our concerns, which was the passport. But I want to, so some of these comments I'll explain as I go through. But
I hope you can understand, Andrea. I got to be fair about it. One thing, and I appreciate you've got this detail so we can read it, and what I would like to do is, you've already brought up a few things, and I'm anxious to read your testimony as we get into the specifics of this with the biometric. As you prepare that for the 22nd, and if we could get that earlier so we could have a chance to have more time to talk about that, I would appreciate it. I do want to get as much overviews on it, and I know you will provide us some comprehensive information.
Chair Metzger, I appreciate that. I want to conclude with this because it's not what you think I think about the biometric. I want to point out one last point, and then I will
go
right
conclude. Ahead. Go ahead.
Currently, DMV allows your photo on record to be proof. So if you go in, you've lost your driver's license, and you're renewing it, it's one of the pieces of evidence. Your statute says, removes some of the language about being able to use your photo. It says DMV, figure it out by rule, figure out what documents. DMV's new rules now will prohibit the use of your photo, and I don't even care if it's biometric or not, as part of the evidence of your identity. And so every time you go in for renewal or replacement, you'll have to provide all these documents, even if you've been driving for 50 years. Okay. We urge you to change that and renewal and replacement, allow the photo by statute, because
that's a good point. We'll in the next 2 weeks, we'll look at that issue and look at that and have some presentations on that. And again, for everyone else, too, I know this is all new, and we got the federal things today, and so for any opportunity to kind of drill down and provide some stuff when we start getting more in detail, that would be helpful.
Can I just note, item 6 on the end of my testimony, the passport issue is no longer an issue. DMV did change it so that you can use an expired passport, which it should, because it's higher security than even your current, than your birth certificate. Right. So please delete that from the changes that need to be changed.
Okay.
Hopefully they'll keep it that way at DMV.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Meyer. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Metzger, Chair Beyer, and members of the committees. My name is Monica Garacki, and I am an attorney for the Oregon Law Center. As you may know, the Oregon Law Center's mission is to achieve access to justice for vulnerable, low-income Oregonians and their communities. Thanks for giving me the chance to testify. I represent clients who are experiencing homelessness. Very many of these people have recently faced domestic violence. They're elderly, or they have physical or mental disabilities. The vast majority of them are lawfully present in this state, but proving that can be a lot more difficult than for others not experiencing poverty or homelessness. And the reason is that it's very common to lose all of your possessions, including your personal vital records, while you're becoming homeless or living on the street. People in this situation are in the midst of total trauma and disaster. They're scrambling just to meet their basic needs, and they're usually, maybe always, unable to afford the cost of a replacement birth certificate or the fee of ID itself. And I'm concerned just to make sure that the changes that you're proposing don't place more severe burdens on these very vulnerable residents. Just to quickly go over all the myriad ways that you need ID to just function in this society, applying for a job, opening a bank account, making a report to law enforcement, cashing a check if you're applying to rent a home, applying for food stamps, entering a federal building, accessing services at homeless shelters, and applying for or seeking a replacement Social Security card. You literally cannot end your homelessness without an ID. It's really good public policy to make sure that our public health systems and our safety, public safety systems can easily identify residents and to help residents access vital services. Children, the elderly, students, and immigrants, both documented and undocumented, benefit from that. Just really quickly, this isn't my testimony, but Section 27's creation of the Ombudsman Services would be incredibly helpful. I just want to request a few changes to this section. I would like to request some additional standards about what type of services would be provided in the statute. The fees to obtain birth certificates from Oregon's Department of Vital Records would be hugely helpful. Also to increase the resources so that people who are very poor and cannot afford the cost of IDs would be a huge benefit, and the Ombudsman program would be perfect for that.
Ms. McGregor, I'm going to cut you off there for today.
Okay.
That's very good information, and I would ask, because of your background too, if you could maybe look at that more thoroughly now and put some of that in writing for the next meeting, recommendations of how we might be more specific in that area, that your expertise would be very valuable in that.
Would it be helpful to provide specific language that we would
suggest? I think the most we get from people who have expertise in the law like you, it's better. Yes, that would be very helpful. Thank you so much for all three of you for coming today, too. Okay. Monica Padillo? Is that right?
Partillo.
Alma Ilos, Francisco Corona. Are my next three that I had signed up. Welcome. Go ahead.
I'm going to interpret for her.
Okay.
Mi nombre es Mónica Portillo.
Hello, my name is Mónica Portillo.
Hoy quiero escribir una carta, no a mi hijo ni a mis hermanas, sino quiero escribir esta carta.
I want to write a letter not for my son,
al gobernador,
but I want to write this letter to the governor for the state of Oregon.
Un estado muy bonito.
A very beautiful
state.
No
lo conozco totalmente, pero por fotos.
I don't know it very well, but
aprecio su belleza, su clima, su calor.
It's a beauty. Un poquito más despacio, okay. Por favor. It's warm.
Y también su frío.
And also it's
su gente. He conocido personas buenas y personas no tan buenas.
I've met nice people and not so nice people.
Personas que discriminan a la gente por su color, por su origen, por su nacionalidad.
Also people who discriminate others because of their nationality, because of the color of their skin.
Por no ser legales en este país.
Or also for not having a legal status in this country.
Pero al final, ¿quién es legal en este país si todos somos emigrantes?
But after all, who's legal in this country if we're all immigrants?
Unos llegaron de Europa, nada más porque sus antepasados llegaron antes.
Some of them came from Europe and only because their ancestors.
Pero nosotros los ilegales, los hispanos, todos venimos buscando el mismo sueño.
We all come here looking for the same dream.
Una vida mejor para nuestros hijos, para nosotros mismos.
A better life for our children and for ourselves.
Señor gobernador, yo solo quiero pedirle a usted, que tiene la fortuna de ser americano,
I just want to ask you,
no olvide sus raíces y sus antepasados.
To be an American, not to forget about your roots and your ancestors.
Que llegaron igual que yo a colonizar este continente.
Who came in the same
y ahora
situation as
usted
me
tiene el poder de decidir si podemos contar con una licencia para poder movernos en un carro y no andar a pie pidiendo raites para llevar a nuestros hijos a la escuela o para ir a la tienda comprar comida para ir al doctor para ir a trabajar honradamente sin robar a nadie.
To go work honestly without,
le pido piense un poquito en nosotros. Yo sé que hice mal al entrar a este país ilegalmente.
I hope you. I just want you to think a little bit about us. I know I did something wrong by entering this country illegally.
Pero cuando se tiene necesidad, se arriesga uno a esto y a más.
But when one is in need, one.
Pero sin hacer daño a nadie.
But without harming or hurting anybody.
Yo en lo personal he trabajado en el campo.
I'm going to ask you to wrap up, Monica. Please.
Tiene que terminar, Monica.
En pleno sol, lluvia y frío. He limpiado apartamentos. He trabajado en el campo. He sacado adelante a mi hijo, sola, trabajando honradamente. Ahora volviendo a las licencias.
Okay, I got to be fair to everyone. I want to hear as many people as possible. So, Monica, thank you. Monica, thank you. You know, you have written testimony too, and again, if that can be translated and submitted, that would be absolutely wonderful. Thank you very much. I want to hear from as many people as possible today. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Yes, sir.
¿Me ayudará? Soy Francisco Corona. Prefiero hablar en español, que es mi idioma natal.
My name is
Estoy aprendiendo inglés.
Corona, and I would
soy estudiante.
Much rather speak in Spanish because it's my mother tongue. I'm a student.
Yes, I'm a student. Quiero exponer mi idea acerca del nacimiento y aprobación de las leyes. Las leyes en este país, tal como en cualquier lugar del mundo. En cualquier lugar del mundo son creadas a base de las tradiciones y cultura
de la sociedad.
Si la sociedad americana de hace un siglo, medio siglo para acá,
the American Society of a century or half a century ago,
ha venido aceptando a gente inmigrante, gente que venimos
people who come,
buscando otra oportunidad de desarrollo,
looking for other, opportunities of development.
Entonces es gente a la que se le ha brindado derechos y privilegios.
They are people who have acquired privileges and rights.
Si estos derechos y privilegios son cortados abruptamente,
if these privileges and rights are cut off abruptly,
crean conflicto dentro de la misma sociedad.
They create conflict among society.
Yo creo todo toda ley que nos está protegiendo a todos como pueblo,
I think that all the laws that protect us as a people,
se puede reformar y puede ir cambiando.
Can be reformed or can be changed.
Para mejorar y proteger a todos quienes vivimos en este estado
in order to improve and protect all
y en cualquier parte de los Estados Unidos
or in any other part of the United States.
Para siempre para mejorar.
Always to improve.
No para crear conflicto, confusión dentro de la sociedad.
Among society.
Es posible detectar a gente que no está con buenos propósitos en este país.
It is possible to spot who are in this country without good purposes.
De otra manera, sintiendo que nos sintamos seguros todos.
Otherwise, if we all feel safe.
Porque si en la misma sociedad se crea confusión acerca, en este caso, del privilegio que tenemos de conducir,
because if there's confusion in society about the privilege of driving,
entonces va a haber más inseguridad en las calles, porque mucha gente
not gonna be as safe because a lot of people
con licencias o sin ellas va a tener que conducir y va a tener que mantener su vida y sus familias.
Thank you
very much.
Thanks,
Mr.
God. Thanks God. We are now at three.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Corona. Okay, thank you. Thank you. And thank you for helping us out. Again, I may get the name wrong, so I apologize. Javier Cita Mary Valesquez. And is it Marcy Rocha or Colcha?
Myra Rocha, I think.
Myra Rocha, if that sounds like you, you're next. Okay. And before we begin, the next ones I'll be asking are, it looks like Alberto Marquez, Juan Lerma, and Utimio Avila will be on deck. So if you're still here, you'll be next. Okay, welcome.
Well, hi everyone. My name is Mary Velasquez. I came to this country in 1989. It wasn't my choice at that time. I was young. I always wanted to improve my life and my education, and I went to college. graduated with a bachelor's degree. But at one point, I was an immigrant. I was illegal at one point. It wasn't my choice either at that time. I was young. But I'm now educated. I am now serving your own people. And when I go to work and I'm there, I take care of those patients that I take care of with respect and love. If I was to be here illegal at that time, and you would have prevented me from getting a driver's license, the people that I go and take care of every single day would not be taken care of with my respect and my love. And I'm sure there are a lot of illegal immigrants right now that would like to do and help your country, if you believe it's your country. But I know that everyone who's here wants to be respected and wants to be part of this country. And you just have to give them a chance to prove. And I think we can prove it by being here. A lot of us are here. And maybe you think we're not going to come and say that this is not right. It is not right. It will cause conflict, violence, and a lot of conflict with the people. The families will be disrupted. Education. People won't be able to drive their kids to work. A lot of hospitals and clinics ask you for the driver license. You don't have it. You can't take care of their children. If these people would like to say, I am the parent of this child, how am I supposed to identify myself, they will say. How are they going to identify themselves as the parent or the guardian if they don't have that? It is very dangerous. 9/11, all I've seen since 9/11, to improve it, to protect the country, it's death and war. We don't want to make more war. We don't want other people to die.
Thank you, Mary.
We want people to improve their lives. I please beg you.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you.
Now, did Javier come in or not? Okay. No. And then did Marcy Rocha, or did I hear Cocha, not be here? Okay. All right. So then Martha Donato or Danone? Are you here? Martha? Okay. Adalberto Marquez? You, sir? Is that you?
Adalberto?
That looks like that, yes. Come on. And I apologize. Please, go right ahead. Go right ahead. Welcome.
Mi nombre es Adalberto y...
My name is Adalberto.
Soy el ejemplo de muchos músicos que somos voluntarios en el estado.
The example for many musicians who are volunteers for the state.
Durante 2 años he participado con un grupo de niños que cantan, que son niños americanos.
I have for the last 2 years I have participated with a group of American kids who
en el desfile del 4 de julio en el condado de Washington.
And we have participated in the 4th of July at the parade for the 4th of July for Washington County.
Durante 2 años hemos ganado, estado en los 2 primeros lugares.
We've won the first place for the last 2 years.
Mi única pregunta es, si yo estoy ayudando a muchos niños a desarrollar el arte.
My only question is, if I'm helping so many kids to develop and to further their studies in art.
Mi pregunta única es, ¿acaso seré una amenaza para este país?
My question is, do I represent a threat to this country?
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. Juan Lerma. Are you here?
Juan Lerma?
No. Okay. All right. Utinio Avila? 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 A-V-I-L-A? Okay. How about Arturo Sabaloso? Okay. All right. Elida Hernandez, Julia Vera, the two of you here. Okay.
Hi, my name is Julia Vera, and I'm a school teacher. I'm here because I'm against what you guys are doing, or actually the Governor Kologoski. I voted for him, and I believe that he tell us what he was going to do, and actually he is changing his mind, and he is not doing what he told us. And I'm very concerned what he did. He's going to hurt our people. He's going to hurt Oregonian. He's going to hurt our economy. We are one of the best economies in the United States, and by doing that, he's going to hurt us. Actually, he's going to hurt you guys because we pay taxes, and we pay you guys' salary and his salary, too. And I'm very unhappy because of that, and I would like to ask him to change his mind, to change the way that he is doing his job, because he's going to hurt most of those people. They are not here, but we are a lot of thousands of people who already are illegally, but working very hard. We are not terrorists. We are here to work. We are here to feed our families, and we are helping each other. So I'm very happy to hear that people are calling us terrorists. I never use drugs. I never do something illegal. And I don't think that we deserve that people are calling us those names because the way that the governor is doing his job. So please, I ask him to change his mind and do the best for us and do the best for Oregonian.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Welcome.
Good afternoon, everybody.
Mira, yo vengo aquí a pedir. Mi nombre es Elidia Hernández.
My name is Elidia Hernández.
Y vengo aquí a pedirle otra oportunidad al señor gobernador que nos dé una licencia para conducir.
I'm here to ask the governor of the state for another opportunity to get a driver's license,
aunque
so that he gets his driver's licenses.
Una licencia temporal, porque si no nos da esa oportunidad va a haber más accidentes que también nosotros vamos a seguir manejando porque no podemos.
Even if it's a temporary one, because there might be more accidents, otherwise if we're not going to be able to drive legally, we will continue to drive.
Porque no podemos trabajar si es sin la licencia y nuestros niños les va a afectar mucho.
Also, we cannot work without our driver's licenses, and that's going to affect our kids, too.
Y no estamos haciendo nada malo aquí. Estamos pagando impuestos. No estamos haciendo, pues, cosas que...
We're not doing anything wrong here. We're paying our taxes. We're not doing things.
Estamos cumpliendo con la ley lo que ellos nos dicen y...
We're following the law.
Pedimos otra oportunidad, por favor, si se puede.
And we're asking for another opportunity, if possible.
Porque ahorita yo, mi hija, está sufriendo mucho. Dice si nos vamos a México y ella qué puede hacer aquí, que aquí los estudios es mejor que
en México. My daughter is suffering a lot because she's concerned about going back to Mexico, and she knows that studies are much better here than in Mexico.
Y por favor que piensen un poquito en nosotros que estamos aquí, que nos...
Please think a little bit about us and give us a driver's license.
Es todo. Gracias.
That's all. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for taking time to come. Thank you very much. Okay. David Villapardo. Villapardo. Okay. Thank you. You'll correct me. Ramon Ramirez and Dalia Andrade. We are now on page 3. You bet. Okay. Might want to take that down so somebody can see.
Baja la caja, ¿no?
Well, thank you for this opportunity. My name is David Villalpando, and I am the president of Guadalajara in Oregon, a nonprofit organization that is working in the relation that exists between the city of Guadalajara in Mexico and the city of Portland for 25 years. Great relation that has been developed business and all kind of relations. And I'm providing a copy in Spanish. I will provide one in English. That's for whoever of you guys that want to practice your Spanish. But anyway, the reason why I'm here today is because as an Oregonian, I'm concerned about safety. And we agree with the legality, and we definitely believe that we have to enforce the law. The only problem is that use states like California, where it's maybe 2 million ghosts, so people that doesn't have a driver's license or ID, is bringing many issues and many problems for the state. And many of those are concerned with safety. One thing that we want to mention that is not been mentioned yet is that we would like to provide an alternative document that can provide security on the identity of people that doesn't have a social security number, which is the tax ID number that a federal agency provides to people that doesn't qualify for a social security number. That's called the ITIN, which is a unique, as the social security number is a number, is unique for the people. And again, it's a federal agency who assigned that number, which obviously they go to all kind of security process in order to be sure that these people is paying their taxes, they are real, and they provide these numbers. So it's another way, an alternative way to have the opportunity for these people until new laws or regulations provide legal status for all these people. Because the truth is, you know, from those 12 million people of illegal undocumented people in the United States, we have at least 1%, which means about 120,000 residents of Oregon are going to be driving with no driver's license, and that will be bad for the state because they will stay here. So we like you guys to review and hopefully amend the law so that you guys provide an alternative way to, first of all, provide a driver's license, an ID, because without way to track who is here in the state, how they're going to control the safety, how they will know if a terrorist, as we fear terrorists as well, is going to be coming to this town. At least, and it's something that I really appreciate the opportunity, because I finally get to meet the smart people in the state of Oregon that knows how to control people that comes to this state. At least you guys know how many we are, where we live, who we are, and hopefully you guys keep making those decisions that can keep this state as safe and going moving forward. David, thank you for this opportunity.
David, thank you very much. I'm sure we'll talk more. Who would like to go next?
Good afternoon. My name is Belia Andrade. I'm 12 years old. I am here to help you better understand how the governor's decision to take driver's license away because of social security number is a bad idea. We as kids depend on our parents for our transportation as if you take the privilege to drive with a valid license, you will also take the ability for them to be involved at school or other events with their kids. My mother is an agricultural farm worker. She works very hard to put food on my table and yours too, by working to cultivate the food that we all eat. If you take license away, you will be taking away her ability to go to work and have transportation. I trust that you recognize the governor's decision and are able to see the important impact that it will have if it is not prevented from taking effect. I am worried for my safety and the safety of everyone else the governor might not have thought of. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to let you know that the executive decision that the Governor Kulongoski has issued does have one positive result, in that he has brought our community together to unite as one voice, to let you know that we are against this irresponsible solution in fighting against ID theft by making Oregon's road safety last on his list of priorities. I ask that you review his decision for the safety of all of us, since he has obviously not taken safety in consideration. We don't need resigning to responsibilities of our government agencies. DMV's vision is in, I quote, DMV, the driver...
I asked you to wrap up now. I thought you were, so I'll give you... If you could, I would appreciate it.
The Driver and Motor Vehicle Service Division is a branch of Oregon Department of Transportation. DMV mission is promote to driver safety, protect financial and ownership interest in vehicles, and collect revenue for Oregon's roads.
Thank you. And thank you for taking the time to come and give us your voice. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ramon.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Metzger and Chair Beyer and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ramon Ramirez. I'm president of the Oregon Farm Worker Union. And for the record, I want to state that as of about a half hour ago, we had counted at least close to almost 4,000 people outside attending this hearing. And we have in front of you right here 9,000 and something petitions are both sides. Some have signatures on them. All have signatures, but it's for the record, we have close to 10,000 petitions for those people that couldn't testify or couldn't come today. So as you know, members of the committee, this is a very important issue for the Latino and immigrant community in the state. And I want to bring up Omar Peraza, and I want to give him my time. I have written testimony on each, and I've already submitted that to the administrator for your reading, but I want to say three things. One, quiero decir en español que queremos las licencias para atrás a todos los inmigrantes. I want to say that we are in opposition to the legislative concept because it has one fundamental flaw, is that you take away the driving privileges of hardworking Oregonians who reside here in the state, who have contributed economically to the viability of the state of Oregon. And you got to recognize that. You know, whether you understand it or not, whether you agree with it or not, tens of thousands of Oregon residents were issued driver's license and use that driver's license every day to provide a service, to put food on the table in the state of Oregon. And I think we got to do something. That's a big flaw. We might not do it in this session, but we certainly got to address the issue that, you know, the possibility of tens of thousands of people are not going to be able to drive, and that's going to have a public safety effect on all Oregonians. The last thing I'd like to say is that my father is a Mexican immigrant from the state of Chihuahua, fought in the Korean War, right? And, you know, if your proposal would become law today, you know, he won a Purple Heart in the Korean War, he would not qualify for an Oregon driver's license because all those veterans, right, who have provided a service in the armed forces in this country up to 1964, all the records were burned in Pennsylvania, from what I understand, and he would not be able to get a driver's license. And that is a horrible thing. I'd like to give up rest of my time to Omar Peraza, 11 years old. Omar?
Big guy, welcome.
I just want to say that
Tell us your name.
Omar Pedraza. That I just want to say that a lot of parents, like, they don't live near their work, and they won't have any transportation to go to work, and some families will be left with no money, and we don't want any more poor families living in this state or anywhere else. So if they can't drive, they can't get to work. That's all I want to say.
You did it very succinctly and well.
And a lot of college students and other people, kids need to get to school, and without transportation, they will not be able to get their education.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for coming and sharing with us. And then I'll ask, as you guys depart, David, if you want to submit your data, you know, to the committee, you may do that. Or if you want to copy it later and submit it, please do.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Alisa Andrade, Leo Vallejo, Santiago Espinosa.
Hello.
Well, go ahead, Santiago. So I've had him. Yeah. So, all right. We got some duplicates here. So, yeah. All right.
Hello, welcome. My name is Elisa Andrade, and I will have Luis Villarreal testifying on my behalf.
Okay. Fellow humans of this world, let's not forget that. I think it was Chief Seattle that said the earth does not belong to us. Mm-hmm. And we treat it as if not only the world belongs to us, the moon belongs to us, and poor people belong to us, and people without any rights belong to us. I want you to imagine that you are the chief Indians and we are the pioneers. And I want you to imagine how you would feel if you have to sit here and beg for a right that is a human right. I came to this country in 1962, 12 years old, as an immigrant, because my stepfather was like you, like many of you. He was an American. He was also like the European brothers and sisters that sat back here. He was very racist. Very racist. And I spent half of my life trying to convince him that this land, this world, this beautiful firmament did not belong to him or to me or to you or to anybody, but to God. I want you not to forget what is in our money. In God we trust. But we seem to have taken God's laws into our own hand, and we seem to want to deny rights to people who are working so hard to maintain the economy, not only of the state, but of the world. Many people complain, well, half of the money goes back to Mexico or Latin America. Three-fourths of the money comes back here because we sell them goods. So I want you to think from the issue of justice, economy, and safety. Safety above all. As an educator for 35 years, that has been my number one theme. Safety, safety, safety. Fellow human beings, don't forget who we are. And as people who have been given the power as a privilege by those of us who are able to vote, please vote according to your heart. Because when you don't put a heart into your head, you are going to repeat history again. I feel like I'm in Germany. I read the diary of Anne Frank, and all we need now is the sirens and the shootings. And all we need is to put a number on their forehead. Please. I am here to advocate for those who are less fortunate than ourselves, but who are rich in so many ways. Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming. Thank you. Leo, is that you?
No, my name is Dagoberto Morales. I come from Medford, Oregon.
Okay.
Thank you. I know Mr. Buckley. I hope you can hear the voice from Ashland. And the reason we are here is because for the license. The reason many people is here undocumented, no, is because they wanna be. It's because it's impossible to be legally. Everyone say let's play with the rules, but how we can play by the rules? If the rules take away from us, how we can play? We cannot able to play. You take the license away from us, how we can able to take the license? How we can say we can buy insurance? Because we don't have to how, we don't know how to buy the insurance. Let's think about and the reality. Let's take away the political issues and let's think about our life. Let's be a human. Let's be a sensitive. Let's see what is best for a state of Oregon. Let's forget about who is pressuring us behind us. Let's see what exactly is more realistic, more safe, and more honorable to everyone who lives in the state of Oregon. I have not like Ramon, 9,000, but I have a 1,500 signatures you can read. If you let me read it, what they want to know to you, they say, Transportation Committee of the State of Oregon, we understand and resident of the State of Oregon urge you to consider our request for, well, number one, an extension of the February 4, 2008 deadline for implementation of the executive order 0722 and 2. To consider an authorization, a provisional license to individuals who are not able to provide a valid social security number. The extension will allow service providers and community advocates to adequately distribute the information to the community. It will offer those potentially eligible for a license to accurate to the necessary education pertaining to driving in Oregon and required to document those offering them the opportunity to obtain same form of the state issue identification or license before the deadline. This will not only benefit to individuals, but the community at large, ensuring that we have licensed drivers on the road, increasing accessibility to liability insurance, and avoiding a public safety nightmare without unlicensed drivers.
Okay. Thank you. I let you go a little long because I thought maybe it was a shorter one, but you have that. You have those, right?
Yes, I do.
And if you would do that, that would be wonderful.
Okay.
And Representative Buck, we really appreciate you coming up here. Ashland.
Thank you, you guys. I hope you consider this, and we can continue have a communication.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. Okay, Alessandro Esparza and Carmen Gonzalez and Mauricio Santiago are the next three names I have on this list.
Mr. Chair, if I could inquire, thank you so much for your courtesy. Do we have a mark on the list for people who have come from further than 100 miles away? If there's,
they haven't indicated that.
Okay, very good.
Thank you. We do have it on the list, but it's not there. It's not
okay.
Muy buenas tardes, señores.
Good afternoon, sirs.
Mi nombre es Carlos Hernández.
My name is Carlos Hernández.
Estoy aquí pidiendo una oportunidad más para toda la gente hispana.
And I'm here to ask for another opportunity for all the Hispanic people.
Que consideren la ley que ha firmado el señor gobernador.
Would like you to consider the law that was signed by our governor.
Todos los días me levanto a las 6 de la mañana.
Every morning I get up at 6:00 in the morning.
Para ir a trabajar y traerles el pan a mis hijos.
To go to work and then to bring the bread to the table.
Tengo 20 años viviendo aquí en el estado de Oregon.
I've been living in Oregon for 20 years.
Y ha sido de maravilloso.
And it's been wonderful.
Vivir aquí.
Living here.
Tengo dos hijos que están afuera esperando que yo salga para llevarlos a comer también.
I have two kids who are waiting outside so that I can take them out to eat.
Consideren, por favor. Señores, no somos criminales.
Please reconsider. We're not criminals.
Somos gente muy trabajadora.
We're hardworking people.
Que nos gusta ganarnos el pan.
Who are used to winning our own bread.
Les agradezco la oportunidad que nos dan a todos nosotros de poder estar aquí y decirles.
I thank you the opportunity you're giving all of us of being here and also to tell you.
Necesitamos seguir teniendo esa oportunidad de manejar.
And we still need to have the opportunity of driving.
Para seguir proveyendo a nuestras familias.
To keep providing for our families.
Ese pan.
To keep bringing that bread to the table for
God families. Bless you, everyone.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Welcome.
Tiene que decir su nombre primero.
Oh, ¿qué digo, Carmen González?
My name is Carmen González. First of all, I want to thank you all for giving me the opportunity of being here.
And
express why it is so important for all the field workers of the Willamette Valley and all the state of Oregon. To have the privilege of having a driver's license. For field workers like me, it is very difficult to go to the fields.
Katona kachon ukampo nyako tatun inatobus akoni nishisianji nusachungji.
Especially because, as you may know, there's no public transportation to go to the fields that are away from the city.
Chatatunka onyanjuku nusachung na ijante chasachungji cha basinda binyundo.
In order for field workers like us to continue. To continue bringing bread to the table for our families and for the whole world, we need to have driver's licenses. The work of the workforce of this valley is based in the work of the migrant workers. The migrant workers, in many cases, the migrant workers don't have a dialect for native language. When the Governor Kulongoski signed this executive order, he didn't take into account the impact that it was going to have in security and the economic factors that was going to cost to the state.
Yeah. Carmen, thank you very much. I see you have it written, and I appreciate your all the help you're giving us today. Could you have that then submitted if there's a...
Yeah, thank you very much for listening to me.
That would be great.
I speak English, but not perfect. That's why I need to translate.
Well, this is good. We're glad to hear as many voices as we can today, so thank you. So it looks like we don't have. See, Ethelberto Cabrera, are you here?
I didn't pass already.
Oh, I see. Martha Rion, R-E-J-O-N, Martha Rion, Rayon, or Javier Rayon, R-E-J-O-N. Okay, Diego Benvelos. Diego Benvelos, are you still here? Okay. Yolanda Mendoza. And also, if you're listening, Nathan Teschke.
Diego arrived.
And, oh, Diego? Okay, Diego, come on up. And Nathan Teschke and Martin Gonzalez will be next. So just if you're hearing. Welcome.
Buenas tardes. Mi nombre es Yolanda Mendoza.
Good afternoon. My name is Yolanda Mendoza.
Y estoy aquí para representar a mi familia.
I'm here to represent my family.
Porque en mi familia hay ciudadanos americanos que ya son de la tercera edad y dependen de nosotros para transportarse al médico,
because
a cualquier cita, a la tienda.
There are elderly people who are American citizens and who depend on us to go to the doctor's appointments, to the store, and to all the places they need to go to.
Y constantemente yo doy ride a personas que encuentro en la calle que no encuentran autobús, y esa es una de las principales causas que vengo yo aquí a representar, presentar mi recomendación, que las ciudades de esta...
I constantly pick up people who have no means of transportation, so I'm here to speak for all the people that need to be taken to several places.
El estado de Oregon y en sí todas las ciudades del estado de Oregon no están preparadas para tener ciudadanos caminando.
To have their citizens walking on the streets.
No importa si son legales o ilegales.
Doesn't matter if they're documented or undocumented.
Lo que importa es que yo he visto en muchas ciudades que no hay ni siquiera aceras para que los niños caminen después de la escuela o los adultos.
There are no pavements for kids to walk on their way back home.
Y en la ciudad donde yo vivo es rural y no entra ningún autobús, así es que tendrían que invertir demasiado dinero.
It's a rural place, and I think you would have to invest a lot of money
en transportaciones públicas para todas las ciudades del estado.
For all the cities in the state.
Ese es mi principal comentario. Gracias.
That's my main comment. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for coming and speaking.
Yes,
yes sir.
My name is Diego Bañuelos. I just want to thank you, Senator Messenger, and all the committee for the great opportunity to really listen on how the people feel about these new laws that are getting in. I hear about some other concerns about the issues, like sharing the road for the bicycles. I guess that's real, real good. But I guess we all need to share the road. And if we don't give that privilege to other people, like to have the license, I guess we're closing the road. Some people have the opportunity, some others don't have the opportunity. And I guess this kind of law, 0722, is very drastic. I think we have to rethink about it. I know government has already taken the decision, but I guess it's within your power too to let him know about what's the feeling of the people which are not going to have the opportunity to drive, to have a way to get to work, as so many people have already mentioned, to get to different places, to have the opportunity to continue taking care of their families. I guess that's very, very drastic, and I think if we rethink about that and look some other ways to help people, because I guess that's what we're here for, to help people. And taking this drastic decision is not going to... Some people are going to be okay, but some other not, and I guess we have to rethink about that. That's all I wanted to say, and thank you for letting me the opportunity to meet to all my brothers who are here expressing their feelings. Thank you.
Thank you, Diego. Thank you very much. Okay. Nathan Teschke and Martin Gonzalez and Mary Lisa Johnson. We have about 14 more minutes left in our hearing for today.
Buenas tardes, gobernador, y gracias por la oportunidad. Buenas tardes, gobernador, y gracias por la oportunidad.
Good afternoon, governor, and thanks for the opportunity.
Mire, yo soy de Perú.
I'm from Peru.
Y quiero decirles que esta no es una lucha solamente de la gente de México.
And I want to let you know that
his
it's
name,
not...
please.
Su nombre, por favor.
Oh, Aurelio Montes.
My name is Aurelio Montes. And I just want to tell you that this is not a fight just from the people from Mexico.
Y estoy tratando de representar a la gente de Sudamérica y hay muchas familias aquí.
I'm trying to represent the people from South America because there are many families here.
Déjeme describirle un día particular en una familia hispana.
Let me describe a particular day in a typical day in a Hispanic family.
Mi esposa y yo nos levantamos muy temprano a las 6 de la mañana.
My wife and I get up very early at 6 in the morning.
Porque necesitamos movilizar a 6 niños a la escuela.
Because we have to take 6 kids to school.
Tenemos que estar dejando a los niños a las 7:30.
We have to leave the kids at 7:30.
Volver a nuestros empleos.
Then go to work.
Y después de eso en la tarde tenemos que recoger a nuestros niños como a las 3 de la tarde.
And then after work, around 3 o'clock, we have to go pick up our kids.
Después de eso nuestros niños tienen asignaciones ya sea en la escuela.
After that, our kids have different things to do, either at school or...
O otras diferentes actividades que ellos tienen.
Or some other activities they have.
Y también nosotros participamos mucho dentro de la comunidad.
And we also participate a lot within the community.
Fines de semana, llevar a los niños a los parques y de compras.
On weekends, we take the kids to the park or we take them shopping.
Ahora, solo imagínese cómo se sentiría alguien que le quitaran esos privilegios de poder dirigir a su familia de esa manera.
I just want you to imagine how somebody would feel if those privileges were taken away from you if you had to, if you were not able to take your family to do all those activities.
No queremos que esto cause un desorden en pedir discriminadamente nuestras licencias de conducir.
¿Me podría repetir eso?
No queremos que esto cause un desorden en estar solicitando indiscriminadamente nuestras licencias de conducir.
We don't want this to cause any kind of chaos in asking for driver's licenses.
Pero queremos que las regulaciones sean de fácil acceso para nosotros.
But we want the regulations to be easily accessible from all of us.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, sir. I'm going to move on now. Next, if that's okay.
Thank you, Mr. Sito.
Thank you for coming.
Just
a little thing.
Pues si ustedes nos quitan el privilegio de dirigir a nuestras familias.
If you take the privilege from directing our families, if you take the privilege away from us.
Nos van a obligar a criar caballos para podernos movilizar.
We're going to force us to get horses to move around.
Thank you, sir.
Well, and that's we do a lot of multimodal transportation, but we weren't thinking of going back to horses. So, but thank you for that concern.
Gracias.
Thank you. Welcome.
My name is Laura Cáceres.
What was the name again?
Felicidades a todos ustedes.
Laura Cáceres.
Okay, thank you.
Tengo una familia hermosa, grande, numerosa.
Congratulations to all of you in the first place. I have a very numerous family.
Mi esposo es ciudadano.
My husband is an American citizen.
Gran parte de mi familia somos residentes.
And a big part of my family are all residents.
Tengo tan solo 10 años de habitar en este país.
I've only been living here for the last 10 years.
Mis hijas han servido desde recién llegamos a California y a este estado de Oregon dentro de nuestras respectivas comunidades religiosas.
My daughters have served ever since we got in the religious communities in both here and in California, ever since we got to the United States.
Algo que yo puedo constatar, solo sé que ella trabaja con niños, hijos de muchas personas, como ustedes.
Something I can prove because she works with people
families.
Like you, who have families like you.
Personas de bien.
Good
que people. Hablan los demás por mi familia. Respetables y honorables.
Respectable and honorable.
Pero desgraciadamente algunas de mis hijas aún no tienen esa legalidad
But
y necesitan conducir.
Some of my daughters don't have that legalidad, ¿a qué se refiere?
¿Al
estar en el país?
Yes.
Are undocumented and they have to drive to go to work.
Y urge que ellas se transporten a unos buenos trabajos que tienen sirviendo a la comunidad.
And it's necessary for them to move around and go to their jobs serving the community.
Lo cual quiere decir que mis hijas son gente de bien, útiles a la sociedad.
Good people. And they're good for the society.
Por bastantes años.
And they've been doing this for several
presentan
years.
Presentan su reporte de ingresos.
They present their income reports.
Yo creo que debería el Senado, todos ustedes respetables compañeros.
I think the Senate and all of you should...
tomar en cuenta esta petición de varias familias porque vengo representando también
the petition of these families because I'm also representing
a mis comunidades católicas de Woodburn,
my Catholic communities from Woodburn,
donde he servido por casi 8 o 9 años.
I have served for about 9 years.
And in Bankford, bastantes familias anglos llegan por ahí necesitando el servicio.
The food bank.
Food bank Vicente Paul.
Lots of American families come to get service from us.
Nosotros somos gente de bien.
We're good people.
Pero ocupamos de su ayuda.
But we need your help.
Solidaridad.
Solidarity.
Familias cristianas.
Christian families.
No podemos erradicar la fe.
We cannot eradicate
de quien pasó por esta vida haciendo el bien. Ustedes son gente de bien.
Of that who
mi corazón me lo dice.
Life doing something good. And my heart tells me that you all are good people.
You, people. Thank you.
Thank you for my comment. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, we have time for two more folks.
Well, I'm going to go in the order that I had them written.
Karen Hansen, are you here? Karen Hansen, are you here? Okay. Rafael Moreno, okay, you'll be one. And the next one on the list is Efren Estrosa? Efrain? Okay, I think that's a no. Then Salu Diaz? Okay, we got Efren. Okay, good. Welcome.
Buenas tardes.
Good afternoon.
Mi nombre es Rafael Moreno.
My name is Rafael Moreno.
Yo llegué a Estados Unidos siendo un joven.
I came to the United States when I was a teenager.
Trabajé en el campo.
I worked in the fields.
El gobierno me dio la oportunidad de arreglar.
And then the government gave me the opportunity to become president.
Resident, and now a citizen. I don't speak English, but I don't want to speak because I don't feel good. You know.
Es como se quiera.
Soy.
No, está bien, sí, usted como usted quiera.
Y vengo a decir que nos afecta a todos.
And I just want to let you know that it affects all of us.
Tengo tres negocios.
I have three businesses.
He trabajado duro por ellos.
And I've worked very hard for them.
Los trabajadores que tengo son trabajadores que atienden a toda la persona que llega con respeto.
I have our people who are very respectful with whoever walks into the business.
Y lo que quiero decir es que nos afecta a todos, no nada más a nosotros como comerciantes en pequeño.
And what I want to tell you is that it affects everybody, not only me, like
small businesses.
Afecta
a compañías grandes también.
It also affects big companies too.
Porque de nosotros viven las compañías grandes.
Because big companies live on us.
Y nosotros vivimos de la comunidad y de ustedes también.
And we live on our community and you do too.
Sí, de que les pido por favor que piensen qué es lo que se tiene que hacer para corregir.
Like you to consider what needs to be done to correct
lo que ahora se está haciendo.
What is being done.
Muchas gracias y que Dios los bendiga.
Thank you and God bless you.
Thank you. Welcome, sir. You get the back cleanup.
My name is Manuel Herrera. I want you to interpret in some way. I lose my English because my English is not very good. Still bad. I have a daughter, 11 years old, who born here, and a boy, 8 years old, and I work for a magazine, Spanish magazine, not for money, because I like to do that. And my daughter told me, "Daddy, what are you doing this? You don't receive nothing for this." And I tell my daughter, you know what? History is something everyone to know, we have to learn. What happened here, it's history. Maybe tomorrow we're going to review what happened today. Y quiero decir también.
I also want to say that.
Me gusta ver mucho películas.
I like watching movies.
And one of the movies I watch and wake up my mind. It's a crazy movie. It's about the Alamo. Maybe some of you know that movie. And that movie for me is crazy because talk about gringos and Mexicanos. But today, it happened the same thing. Maybe it's a crazy juego de palabras, okay, but it's not. Words. It's the la historia que mis hijos van a revisar tomorrow.
It's the story that the history that my kids are gonna see.
Y más allá de sus apuntes, más allá de sus notas que tienen en sus hojas,
and more than their notes,
más allá, mucho más allá de lo que ustedes ya saben, okay, que va a pasar. Y de lo que ustedes están en autoridad de hacer uso es hacerlo con responsabilidad, porque la historia puede cobrarles un capítulo muy caro a ustedes.
Because history might play a very important role.
Thank you very much.
Charge a high price on you guys.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank all of you. I'm going to turn it back over to Representative Byron in a second here, but just again to give you an idea of where we're going forward. We've tried to get these things started prior to session, which I think is good, gives us a little bit more time. Those of you who are following the specifics of the legislation now have a copy of it or can have access to it. If you don't have a copy of it, so you can look at it more thoroughly now. And at least the Senate, and I don't know if I've conferred with Senator, or Representative Byer on this, you know, the Senate will be meeting on the 22nd to continue this process. And then as we move into session on the bill, which will be just about 2.5 weeks from now. And if you have written comments, again, and for those of you listening outside or want to prepare written comments, please bring those so that the members of the committee can have an opportunity to read those and hear those in addition to what we have in terms of regular testimony. And then we'll be moving and discussing this further. With that, colleagues, before I turn to Representative Byer, is there anything from the members of the Senate before we adjourn for the day?
Senator, what time on the 22nd does the public need to be here?
We didn't have a specific time. I believe we had set the afternoon with the 1 o'clock start time again, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Tentatively at a 1 o'clock start time, that'd be another 1 to 4 time. If that's problematic, let's talk to Patrick, but I think it'll be the same 3-hour time block. Any other comments from the Senate members? Okay, I will thank you and all for coming and listening. We did get through 31 pieces of testimony today. I appreciate that very much, and we'll look for some more of those. And I appreciate all you folks coming today. So the Senate is adjourned for the day.
¿Se puede?
The ones who signed up for the session, are we going to give them the opportunity?
Nobody would be allowed to do this. Nobody would be allowed to do this.
We're not done yet. Can we wait until we're finished?
The House is not finished yet.
Señor gobernador, yo vengo del sitio. Quiero llevar un buen sabor.
We can't do it.
Let's finish our business for the day if you'd like to talk.
I am closing the public hearing on LC 82, and the public, the record of who has signed up will be kept, and it will be available for you who want to come back on January 22nd, tentatively in the afternoon of January 22nd. Plus, there will be continued hearings as we go into the session in February, and more opportunities at that point. And I want to make sure everybody understands that we want to listen and hear what you have to say. And there will be opportunities to do that, and we look forward to seeing you back. And so I've closed the public hearing, and right now I'm going to open a work session on LC 64.
Madam Chair.
When we're done.
Madam Chair, first a couple of comments, and then I'll make a motion. The driver's license in Oregon has become an identification card, and that's a very unfortunate situation. We should have two separate pieces of identification, one for identification and one for driving. We do not have that currently, and that's unfortunate. But that's the way it is. And therefore, Madam Chair, I move that LC 82 be recommended for introduction at the February 2008 special session.
Representative Gilman moves that LC 82 be recommended for introduction in the February 08 session. Discussion.
Madam Chair.
Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I'll be voting no. I don't think there should be any illusions that this bill will move forward and it will pass. I'm voting no. I'm the grandson of immigrants. My grandmother broke the law to get here, and I'm not going to be a hypocrite and say anything other than that. And I'm sure I'll be voting no.
Thank you. Representative Tomei.
I'll also be a no.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And remember that this does not bind you as a yes vote as we move into the committee hearing process, and I will make sure I point that out. And so those... Okay. All right. So I'll go ahead and take the vote. So those that are in favor are of the LC being introduced will vote yes, and those no, and the clerk will call the roll.
No.
Aye.
Aye.
No.
Chair Byer?
Aye. Not having enough votes? Fail. We have to have four.
And you have four? I'm sorry that, I mean, I apologize for not letting you know sooner than I would have let you know.
Do we want to reconsider or do we want to wait?
This is going to pass. I think we need to change
the strategy. We don't need to have it.